Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and once again, time for Twit's audience survey. We'd really like to hear from you. It's only going to take a couple of minutes, really. That's all. Just go to twit.tv/survey and let us know what you think. Your anonymous feedback will help us make Twit even better. And thanks for your continued support. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show here originally aired on Sunday, February 5th, 2017. This is episode 1361. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by Tracker, a coin-sized tracking device that pairs with your smartphone and keeps you from losing your most valued possessions. Visit thetracker.com right now and enter the promo code TECHGUY to receive a free Tracker Bravo with any purchase. And by Epson's new EcoTank printers. With Epson's line of SuperTank all-in-one printers, you can print thousands of documents without running out of ink. EcoTank is loaded and ready to print when you are. Visit Epson.com/EcoTank to find out more. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Time to talk computers and the internet and home theater and digital photography and, you know, smart...
I can't find the answer to the question I heard.
Amazon's Echo? Okay. You know, I renamed her. She's that, you know, that's that black tube. Actually, you can't say that anymore because Echo can come in all sorts of shapes. There's a little one called a dot, and now it's going to be built into televisions and cars and everywhere. And like a lot of these devices, they have a custom wake word. You know, that's the word you say to get them talking, to get them listening. On Apple, it's, you know, hey, you know, S-I-R-I. I don't want to say them because I don't want to trigger them. It's hard because I know many of you are listening to this show next to these devices. Some of you are listening on these devices, and that, you know, I don't want to interrupt it. Reminds me of, what was it, a couple of years ago? An Xbox ad where they had the kid from Breaking Bad on, and he was doing some Xbox commands, and it triggered Xbox Ones all over the nation. Now, I noticed that Amazon has gotten smart because they have made it so that an ad somehow cannot trigger the Amazon Echo. So they can do the trigger words in the ads, but it doesn't set it off. I don't know how they're doing it. I wish I could. If I knew, I would do that to our, they fuzz it somehow, or they put something in it that, you know, Amazon, if you're listening, could you help me here? Help me out a little bit. And Google and Apple and Microsoft. Microsoft's got Cortana. And I think you have to say, hey, you know, first. So Amazon's Echo has four words now. You can choose four different words. Originally, it was Alexa, but they realized some people have names that sound like that. Even that's their name. I have a friend named Alex. He works at CNN. He can't. He has his Echo. His Echo is called Echo, or no, it's called Amazon. So you can do Echo, Amazon, and they've just, you know, and the A word, and now they've added, which most people use the A word, right? And now they've added computer. Unfortunately, I thought, oh, that'd be fun because of Star Trek. You know, I could say, hey, computer. But then I realized on this show, I say that word all the time. So my Echo, yeah, see, she just got triggered. My Echo gets triggered. I don't know why they have to have these limited. I guess because it's such a limited processor, they can't ask it to do more. You know, they can build it into the software, but the way these things work, and I think it's important to emphasize, and I've said this before, and I know people are a little scared they have something that's listening in the house. In fact, that's why Amazon puts a special button on the Echo that you can press to say, don't listen, stop listening. But it's not listening to, well, it is. It's listening to every sound in the house, obviously, all the time. But it doesn't mean that's sending it to Amazon. In fact, that would be prohibitively expensive, uploading the audio from your home constantly. It's not going to do that. imagine. I mean, they've sold more than, what, at least a million, I think several million of these. Several million devices continuously uploading every sound coming in your house to Amazon for analysis. That wouldn't work. So they have to do it on the device, and this is the way the phone works and everything. These all work the same way. They're watching the sounds go by, but they're doing pattern matching. They're looking at all the way, you know, the sounds to a computer look like jaggy lines, you know, little curves, sine waves. Zzz, you've seen them, you know, on an oscilloscope or, shh, I'm not talking to you. I'm gonna have to press that button, aren't I? They look like jaggy lines, and so the Echo has inside itself a set of jaggy lines that matches those four words: Echo, Amazon, Alexa, and computer. And it just goes, and I guess it's fast enough now. I could do four at a time. Is that it? I wasn't talking to you. Siri only does one word. Google is hey, you know who, and Microsoft does hey Cortana. Oops, I said it. Sorry. It's so hard not to when you're talking about these devices. It's tough. Anyway. Once it gets the trigger word, you know, it sees, oh, there's the squiggly line I've been looking for. From that point on, it just sends it all to Amazon. People are a little paranoid, though. I mean, I have to point out, you have microphones on all over the place, don't you? Cameras and microphones. All over the place. So it's not just your Echo you have to worry about. I guess the theory is, or the concern, well, once you understand that it's not sending it back all the time, that would be the initial concern. Once you understand that, then the concern. In fact, I've talked to smart people. There was a well-known expert in this field, believe it or not, and journalist who refused to have an Echo in the house because she says she and her husband were talking about a trip, and all of a sudden, advertisements for luggage showed up in his Amazon stream. I don't know. That's not credible. Okay. I mean, I'm sure that happened, but it has nothing to do with the fact that you two were having a conversation. It's not that smart. It's not listening all the time. However, the concern might be that with a duly constituted order, I don't know if it would require a warrant, but with an appropriate request from law enforcement, Amazon might be able to turn that on. But, you know, Apple could turn on your iPhone for that matter. You've got a microphone all over the place. Remember the director of the FBI, James Comey, said he covered up the camera on his computer with a piece of tape. Now, I think a lot of people do that. What do you do about the microphone and the camera on your phone? What do you do about that? I mean, how paranoid should we get? How paranoid? Now, see, Dale Poco says that's naive. How could it not be listening? Well, it is listening, but it's not sending it back to Amazon. Of course it's listening, but it's not sending. And we know that. I mean, you can verify that for yourself if you feel like I'm making this up. And fire up a Wireshark, which is a program that will watch your internet traffic, watch all your network traffic, and look for a steady stream of content going back to Amazon. Be simple enough. Now, Pac Northwest in our chat room says, here's how you know. If you sneeze and it says, bless you, then you know that it's listening. All right, maybe. Although that'd be cool. That would be a good skill. They'd have to add a fifth trigger word, right? Achoo would be the fifth trigger word. I don't tape my camera because there's cameras everywhere. There's cameras on everything. I think sometimes, I know this is actually a faculty of the human brain. We can focus on the individual, but the larger, sometimes we lose the larger perspective. So we feel good. James Comey, director of FBI, said, tape up your camera. So is Mark Zuckerberg for that. Apparently he does too. Tape up. So I taped up my camera. See, I'm feeling good. And you forget about the fact that you are carrying around with you the ultimate surveillance device in your pocket that tells your exact location within 3 meters via GPS, has a microphone that could be on all the time because it's always talking to the network, and a camera. Do you tape over the camera on your phone? Both of them? Both of them? There's one in the front and the back. You can see the conundrum here. It's a conundrum. We love this. We've surrounded ourselves with this stuff. But at the same time, I do think there's a convenience to it, and I like the idea, and I'm not too worried. I think the better thing to do would be to keep an eye on law enforcement and make sure that they adhere to the legal rules and that the courts are independent and, these checks and balances work because, in fact, we are sitting ducks at this point. We really are. 8888-ASK-LEO. That is the phone number if you want to dispute my contentions, ask a question, talk high tech. Everything with a chip in it, even the computer. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Your call's next.
You're out.
Hey. You put an X over the camera? Yeah, I'm the last guy to talk. I got microphones and cameras all the time. Intentionally. All the time. There. Now you can't see me. You can't see me. You can't see me. Just going to leave that there. Yeah, I saw that, Dr. Mom. I saw your note that Syracuse is in a dispute over Fios, and Verizon's not going to air the Super Bowl. That's a nice way to appeal to your customers, huh? Oh, it's driving me crazy. I gave Abby one of my phones. It used to have a number that was forwarded to Google Voice. And I deleted it, from Google Voice, that phone. But it's still forwarding. And now I can't have no way to turn it off. Some switch cameras. Oh, there I am. Oh, there I am. I'm not gone. You won't see me. Turn off that sound. Yeah, a lot of webcams have shutters. That's not uncommon. What are you going to do? I think the better idea would be, it's going to be very difficult for you to prevent your, there's cameras everywhere as you drive down the street. It's instead make sure that the judiciary is strong, Congress is strong, that law enforcement is law-abiding. And if you live in Russia, well, go out by the tree and have a conversation. Yeah, everybody can watch the game on streaming. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. There she is, Kim Schaffer. Answering the phones. Hello, Kim.
Good morning, afternoon.
Now, is this a hardship for you? Would you rather be sitting in front of the TV watching the big game, the superb owl?
Well, it's not on for a few more hours, so this
I beg to differ. I got up at 8 a.m. and it was on. I mean, not the game itself, but
I don't care about that stuff.
Man, do they go on and on, huh?
I pretty much only care about the commercials and the halftime show.
Yeah.
I want to see
Lady Gaga.
I want to see Luke Bryan shake his butt.
Who's Luke Bryan? Is that
a
singer?
He's the one who's going to sing the national anthem.
Ah.
He's a hot country singer.
Hot country singer.
Yes. Very hot.
And then the cast of Hamilton, I think, is going to do My Country Tis of Thee, America the Beautiful, with another song.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And then there'll be a flyover. There'll be a marching band. And then eventually they'll play some football at some point this afternoon.
I don't really care about that part. I don't have what is that saying? Neither one of my teams are in it, so.
Oh, yeah. Our lovely 49ers, they're long, long, far away. They've been fishing for a while. Yeah, yeah. So, I do think that this is the most viewed, I believe, the most viewed television show of the year. I think so, live TV. 100 million people, they say, will be watching this in the U.S.
Do they watch it in other countries as well?
Yeah, yeah. In fact, there are people mad in Canada because they can't watch it, although I've heard it will be streamed in Canada. Here in the United States, you don't have to have a TV. You could watch it on your device, your computer.
Oh, that's nice.
If you want to watch it on your smartphone, you'll have to be a Verizon customer, but Fox Sports is putting it on the web, so you can watch it on your computer.
And have very good eyes.
Well, and you can Chromecast it, or, you know, there's ways to put it on the big screen if you have a TV. So, but anyway, I don't know why we're talking about that. We got a radio show to do between now and then.
Yes, we do.
And you've been lining up the callers, I see.
Yeah.
Is it slow on, I can't remember, last year? Like during Super Sunday, is it slow?
Well, it's funny because it was very slow in the beginning, but I kind of think you maybe didn't give out the phone number in the first segment.
I did not.
That might have been why.
That's terrible. 8888-ASK-LEO. You're right. I got so caught up because my echo started talking to me. I forgot.
But I was going to blame it on the Super Bowl. So.
Or blame it on Leo.
I can't even say that, right? You can't
blame
say
it on the Super Bowl.
Super Bowl.
80. Big game. You can say Super Bowl. You can't say it for commercial purposes.
In a commercial capacity.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's funny watching people jump through hoops with the big game and all that stuff.
Yeah.
It's like they can't say it. No, Super Bowl, Super Bowl, Super Bowl. I can say it as
well. We're not advertising.
I could just say it. Super Bowl. All right, let's get some phone calls. 8888-ASK-LEO. 888-827-5536.
Yeah, Kenny in Springfield, we're going to go back to fax machines or
something. Oh, no. Oh, no.
Or how to fax without a fax.
Thank you, Kim. Hello to Kenny in Springfield, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Kenny.
Hello, how are you doing?
I'm well. You need a fax? You need to send a fax?
Yeah, I wanted to send a fax, but I don't have the old ancient fax machines.
With a curly thermal paper and, yeah. And then for a while, you could get fax modems. Remember that? There were modems that would also send faxes. That was short-lived.
Yes.
Now you can use services. There's a lot of them. eFax, efax.com. There's even free fax services. I have an eFax subscription. I've had it for years. And the way those things work is you will either email it or upload it to a website, and then they fax it for you.
Yeah, I looked at eFax, and they went like $16.99.
It's ridiculous. I know. It wouldn't make sense for a single fax, right?
Yeah, is there like a cheaper type service?
There are free fax services. Let me, like I said, I've been stupidly paying eFax for years. You know, I don't think I've sent a fax in a while. Scooter X in our chat room says fax zero. How do they pay for it, though? I mean, they must have some mechanism. Maybe it's just to come on to buy their subscription. Maybe they put an ad. I wonder if they put an ad on your fax. I hope not. Faxzero.com is one. Usually the way it works is you can send one fax once in a while, that kind of thing, or a few pages.
Yeah, that's all I need is
right.
That one fax.
You're dealing with a realtor, right, or a mortgage broker, somebody who needs, like that's more secure. Right? Oh, well, if you want it, we can't do it by email. We can't do it by attachment. You can't do it by Google Docs. No, you have to fax me a piece of paper with your handwritten signature on it. It's crazy. I think this is soon to be gone. If you're a healthcare professional, Dr. Mom, who's a doctor, says Doximity offers free HIPAA-compliant fax services. That's one reason you might want to use it. Faxes are, I guess, more private.
And I had one more separate question.
Sure.
A few weeks ago, you mentioned a cheap camera system. I forget the name of the cameras you can get on Amazon. You said they had they were pretty cheap.
Are you talking about surveillance cameras, still cameras, video? What are you talking about? What kind of camera?
Yeah, surveillance cameras.
Yeah, I was talking about the Yi Cam. Yi is made by a big Chinese company you probably even have heard of called Xiaomi. And I actually been using the Yi action cams. They're very good. They compete well with the GoPro. Yi is Y-E, and they make really inexpensive, you know, a variety of very inexpensive surveillance.
And you said they had one that had, like, the night vision and stuff.
Yeah.
Like
now, the only, you know, and I have no way of figuring this out, but we have had problems. Yeah, it's like $34 for the Yi home camera wireless security system. And then they have for $59, you can get one with that you can steer online. You know, pan, tilt, zoom with night vision and all of that. The only thing I worry about with these cameras, and I don't know, I have no reason to believe this is the case with Yi, but we have heard other camera systems like the Foscam system with back doors in them, or badly set up so that people could get into them and look at what you're doing. Now, if it's just a picture of your backyard, who cares? If it's your boudoir, perhaps more security would be required. But I'm, you know, because Yi is made by such a big company in China, it's not some fly-by-night. I think they're probably all right. And I'm looking at the reviews on Amazon, and they're overwhelmingly positive. I guess we're going to have to at some point do some sort of Internet of Things, you know, kind of check to audit to make sure that they're secure. And because it takes, frankly, some serious skills to monitor these cameras, to hack them. Really, ultimately, if you want to figure out if something is hackable, you need a hacker to hack it. And they call it euphemistically pen testing. It stands for penetration testing. But it takes some serious. It basically, you have to be as skilled a hacker as a bad guy to figure out if a bad guy can get in.
Maybe that's something you can maybe ask Steve Gibson.
Yeah, I'll ask our security guy. I'll ask around. Security. I mean, I because of Foscam's repeated problems, I probably wouldn't recommend them. They were a big name for a long time. One way to maybe to check, you know, Steve has this great site that lets you search for hacks, basically, and lets you search. So, for instance, with the Foscam problem, that this site was able to find all the Foscam issues, all the cameras, and make a map so you could actually look at anybody's camera. I'll get you the name of that that site. I don't know if it'll help you, but I'll get you the name of that in a bit. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
You're out.
What's that site? Steve always kind of mispronounces it. It's the hack search engine. Something with an S. Begins with an S. Oh, Shodan. Thank you. Shodan. So, thing is, if you went to Shodan, but I don't know if you could search for, could you like search for, you know, well, let's see what, if I search for Foscam, for instance. Oh, that's not it. That's somebody else. Shodan, Shodan.io. They don't call it a hacker search. They call it a search of Internet Things. But can I search for Foscam? I don't know. Oh, yeah. You can. So these are Foscams. Okay. Can I search? I wonder if I can search for Yeecams. See, it's going to find. The problem with Yee is so short, it's going to find that YI in a variety of things. Yeah, I don't think so. I don't know. You know, let's see. YI cam security. Maybe somebody has done a Yeecam. Yeah. I think it's a, you know, I mean, Xiaomi's a big company, a reliable company. You know, it just sounds racist to say they're a Chinese company, but the problem is a lot of smaller Chinese manufacturers just really don't care about security. So I hate to say that, but I think I'm going to say the Yeecam is okay. You know, their action cam is fantastic, and it was inexpensive. Andy Yanako recommended it. So I know the technology's there. The question is, you know, how hackable are these? Spock Sports VR for iPad. Yeah, but you're not really seeing the... Now, correct me if I'm wrong, Mike. I haven't installed it yet. I should put it on here. But you're not really seeing the highlights in 360. It's just you're in a virtual room, right? Yeah. I'll be one of a million people downloading this. Oh, Fox Sports Go. But it's their VR, right? Fox Sports VR. Yeah, it's just, I'll show it on the camera here. You see the video on 360? Well, yeah, but the video, not of the highlight. Well, we'll find out. We'll find out, won't we? As soon as it's done downloading. And this, this one you need a, you need a cable subscription, don't you, for this? Live Like. Yeah, let's demo it with past games. Okay. That's cool, right? But that's just their room. That's just their little thing. Now I want to see what if you could do that with the highlights. Oh, yeah. I mean, it's not on camera. So I downloaded the Fox Sports VR app. There's two ways. The Super Bowl you can watch on Fox Sports Go. Now, I think you don't have to have a cable subscription. You could anybody can watch. They're, at least on the website, they're streaming that. I don't know about mobile. I think mobile, you probably have to have a cable subscription. And then they have this Fox Sports VR, which you don't need any special hardware to use, but you can put it on your phone and or your tablet, and it lets you see highlights, you know, in 360 degrees, which is kind of cool, except you can't really, you sort of see it in 360 degrees. In order to do the completely, you know, like you're in the game 360 degrees, they would somehow have to put a camera in the game, in the middle, you know, sticking up where the quarterback is. I don't think that would be too desirable. So what you have, in effect, is a 360-degree view of your skybox at the Super Bowl. Well, that's pretty cool. A pretty good view of the Super Bowl from you know, through the screen in the skybox, and you're right down there on the 50-yard line. I think I'll probably have this fired up on my iPad just to watch while I'm watching TV. And then you can choose highlights and different shots and different angles and things like that. So you could try it now because they have some college games in there, kind of a demo version of it. Fox Sports VR for iOS or Android. And you could, of course, you know, you could, if you had it on your iPad, you could use your Apple TV and stream it to your TV set. But I think it's you might not want to because you kind of want to touch it, right? You kind of want to steer it. If you had Gear VR or Google Cardboard visors, you know, those VR visors, you could strap this on your head and look around. Instead of turning the phone or the iPad, you just turn your head to see a different angle. But it's not like you're in the – it's a little deceptive to call it VR. You're not quite in the middle of the game. You're on the sidelines because obviously they can't put a camera in the middle of the huddle. Or could they? You know, players could have 360-degree cameras right on their helmets. That would be interesting. I bet you that happens next couple of years. These cameras are small and smaller all the time. There's a couple of ways to do 360-degree video. One is expensive. There are companies like Nokia, which makes the Osmo, which is, or Ozo. Ozo, I guess it is. Some goofy nonsense name. $45,000 camera, and it's just it's a sphere with a bunch of cameras all or studded with cameras all around it, and then the software that lets you stitch all of those different images into a single virtual image that you can look around in. That's how it works. But they're less expensive devices. I've had for a year now the Ricoh Theta S, which is under $400. It just looks like a little cigarette lighter. It's got two lenses on it, front and back. They're just very wide-angle lenses. And the software can stitch them together, correct them, and make it look like you're in a sphere. It's just a little lower res than the Ozo. I think it'd be kind of cool, though, to be in the huddle, be on the helmet of the quarterback or the helmet of the, you know, one of the linemen. That'd be kind of cool. 8888 Ask Leo. I bet, you know, they've got helmet. Don't they have little lipstick cams they put in helmets? There's not a great view, though. You'd have to have, and this probably wouldn't work too well, but you have to have something sticking up from the helmet itself so that you could see around. Maybe not. 8888-ASK-LEO. Let me say it again. That's the phone number. Robert, he's on the line from Orange County, California, on line two. Hi, Robert.
Hey, Leo. Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for calling.
Hey, I use Google Drive and Google Photos. Google Drive for work, Google Photos for personal.
Yeah.
Google Photos, you can look at a photo and click on details, and it has the location of where you took the photo.
Right.
Google Drive loses the location, and even if you download the photo, the location's gone.
Really?
Yep.
That stinks. So that information is stored kind of as a sidecar to the image information, something called EXIF or extended information, EXIF. And the camera puts it in the image, the original image. It's preserved, as you point out, when you upload it to Google Photos. I thought that Google Photos, if you wanted to save the full quality photo, would use Google Drive to store it because it counts against your Google Drive quota. Do you have your Google Drive? You said you use for business. Is it part of the Google for Business package?
No, it's just
your regular consumer Google Drive.
Yeah, and I pay the $2 a month, so I have 100 gigabytes. So everything for business and work is on Google Drive. Personal is on Google Photos.
Yeah.
But well, all my jobs, everything I take pictures of, I'd like to look it up by location, and you can't. There's no location anymore.
Huh. Well, that's news to me, but is there some reason you don't want to use? Oh, I guess because you want to keep your personal separate from your
business.
Yeah,
I just thought maybe you knew why they did that.
No, I didn't even know they did do it because, as I said, if I store the full quality images, I'm using Google Drive. But I guess it has to do with how it's stored. How do you get your photos onto Google Drive?
I use my Android phone, my Note 5, and then
upload it to Google Drive.
Yeah, I plug it into the computer. I have a folder, Google Drive, that syncs to Google Drive.
Okay.
Everything goes into that folder.
Yeah. So, okay. So that makes sense. So it's not... It doesn't know anything about the type of file, and for some reason it's stripping out that extra information because it says, well, you're just storing it as a document. You're not storing it as a photo per se. I would guess so there are ways to use Google Photos to separate the personal from the private. You know, it has photo albums within Google Photos that you can give access to other people to. You know, you could have, for instance, in Google Photos, a business folder. That would be visible. You know, nobody would be able to see your personal stuff if you used your business folder.
Yeah, but then you have to go in after you upload 300 photos and then go to Google Photos and separate them all, and that's just way too much work.
Well, you can. I mean, it depends. You know, Google Photos is very good at search. So if all the business stuff is taken in a certain location or is of a certain thing, you probably could use search to create those albums pretty quickly.
Yeah. No, I don't need to spend the extra time.
Yeah, I understand. Yeah, I don't. You know, I don't know. First of all, I didn't even know it did that. I'm going to have to experiment with it. I've never tried to put photos on Google Drive separately from Google Photos. So let's maybe somebody in the chat room is listening, or somebody could do some research while we talk to some other people. Keep listening, okay?
I will.
Thank you. Yeah, Robert, it's a good, interesting question. I'm guessing it's. You know, Google just saying, well, Google Drive is for file storage. Of course, the funny thing is, in order to remove that information, they'd actually have to modify the image, you know, recompress it and take that EXIF stuff out. All right, assignment for the chat room. We have a great chat room, by the way. I haven't mentioned it lately. If you go to our website, techguylabs.com, you'll see a link to the chat room. It's open to everybody. You can join. It's family friendly. We have a lot of moderators in there to keep it that way. But it's also a great place to go to ask questions, to participate in the behind the scenes of the show. And I often think of the chat room as my researchers, my externalized brain, my writers, because I've got it going all the time in front of me. In fact, when I walk out of the door here and go back to my usual life, it's difficult because I don't have my team with me, my chat room team with me. Yeah, that would be an interesting experiment. Okay, so Dr. Mom says maybe it's just ignoring the EXIF data. So the experiment would be upload a photo to Google Drive, then re-download it. I think Robert said he did that. And when you re-download it and then look at it with some other program, that EXIF information has been wiped, has been cleared. Somebody in the chat room says he knows the exact solution. I'll tell you what, we'll see if we can get his answer in just a moment. 8888-ASK-LEO, that's the phone number. Our photo guy, Chris Marquardt, be around about an hour from now talking about digital photography. Maybe he'll know. 888-827-5536. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
You're out.
Yeah, you could always use. I mean, the other thing, Robert, would be to use another party for the business photos. Use Flickr or Amazon or OneDrive or somewhere else. Hey, our show today brought to you by Tracker. Oh, I love Tracker. You're going to love Tracker, too, if you ever lose things. Do you lose things? According to Newsweek, The average American wastes 55 minutes a day, every day, looking for stuff they can't find. They know they have it. How many times have you said that? Somewhere here, I know it. Honey, have you seen my keys? They're here. I know I had them yesterday. Where did you see them last year? Well, I don't know. Where do you think they might be? If I knew, they wouldn't be lost. Oh, it's too bad you didn't buy the tracker, honey. I told you to buy the tracker. The tracker, it's a coin size. It's about the size of a quarter. Weighs less than a quarter. Anodized aluminum device. You attach to your keys. You put in your luggage. You put on your bike. Anything that you lose, your remote control, you can attach it via a loop or adhesive. You could even put it on your pet, on your dog. They have a waterproof case, too, you could put around it to protect it. You could have a laser-engraved message on it, Fido's name and number. But the beauty of this is you pair it to your phone, and now your tracker phones home. Your tracker tells you where the device is with a map on your phone. You also have two-way separation alerts, so when I leave my keys behind, my phone howls. When I leave my phone behind, my tracker howls. There's even a button on the tracker I can push, and it'll make my phone ring, even when the phone is silenced. The best thing about the tracker, I think it's unique to the tracker, the crowd location network. See, they have sold now millions of trackers. I think almost 5 million trackers now. And that means that you are in a crowd network of millions of other people. When they see your keys, their phone goes, oh, there's Leo's keys, and they notify you. So even if you get outside Bluetooth range, because it's a Bluetooth device outside of 100 feet, you still can find your device thanks to all the millions of tracker users all over the world. Look at that now. That map, I love this map because it's just getting denser and denser and denser. Your phone can track up to 10 devices at once. You can customize the alerts so you're notified before you leave your item behind. It uses Bluetooth LE, so the battery is long life, up to a year. But it can also be replaced, and that's something that the other Bluetooth guys don't do, that you have to throw the device out. I don't like that. That's wasteful. When the battery dies in my tracker, put a new battery in. I got another year to go. Go to thetracker.com, thetracker.com. And never lose your possessions again. Yes, you can put it in your wallet, small enough to fit right in one of those little wallet slots. And it's very light. You'll never notice it. If you enter the promo code TECHGUY, a free tracker Bravo with your order. And look, you can get engraving on it. You can even get, they use UV LED silk screening. You can put an image on it. Lots of accessories. Thetracker.com, promo code TECHGUY. When you complete your order, make sure you use the offer code TECHGUY and you'll get a free tracker Bravo. The tracker! So let me just, this is interesting to me. Let me go to Google Drive. I don't think I have any photos. See, even when I look at Google Drive, I see Google Photos is in the sidebar there. Let me get a photo. Let's see what we can do here. Okay, I'm going to get a photo. Google, this is a photo on Google Drive. Now, the details here. Oh, this is interesting. So, I know this has EXIF information on it because it's stored on Google Photos, but it doesn't show the EXIF here. So, it's not stripping it out. It's just not showing it. Let's see if I click the info button. No, that's it. That's interesting. So it's this image has EXIF information. It hasn't been modified. This image is on my Google Photos. But when I view it in Google Drive, so that's really probably just simply a limitation of the Google Drive viewer, the software. Because if I now download this and I view it, here. Oh, no. All the EXIF is gone if I download it from Google Drive. Isn't that interesting? That's really interesting. So that has, I think this is a limitation of the, now if I go and look at Google Photos, same picture. I go and look at Google Photos of the same picture in the, whoops, not that one, this one. And I look at info. Maybe I picked a bad image to try. It doesn't have any EXIF info. Oh, I know why. This is from Facebook. This is that moronic Facebook. Let me look. Let me use a real picture. All right. So that's my problem. Not even using a good picture here. All right. Yeah, this is image. This has EXIF information. It has the GPS, all that stuff. All right, so now let's go to back to Drive. Look at the same image. No EXIF information there. Let's download this. And there is EXIF. Okay, so that was the previous test was a bad test. So this image, I'm downloading it from Google Drive. No. Yeah. All right. But if I then move this to Google Drive, this image on Google Drive, download it from Google Drive. Yeah, it still has the EXIF information. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888, ask Leo. Well, I just did some experimentation with Google Drive just to check to see if I can duplicate Robert's results. I took a photo that I took a couple of days ago and it was uploaded to Google Photos and has all the information about what camera, what the settings were, what the location was, the GPS coordinates, all of that's visible. Looked at it in Google Photos, all of it's visible. Downloaded it, all of it's visible. I then copied it to my Google Drive. And it is true that when I look in Google Drive at that photo, it doesn't have that information. That's just, I think, the way Google Drive displays it. It just doesn't have a space in the sidebar. It's just some decision. The guy who wrote the code that displays the photo just didn't put that information in the sidebar. But the information is still in that file because I then downloaded it from Google Drive and it was still there. So it's not stripping it out. It's just not displaying it. And that's, if you think about it, sometimes it's confusing. We're looking at a website and it's a website. No, you're running a program. You're running a program on the web, but you're running a program, and that program has limited capabilities. In the case of Google Drive, it doesn't show you the extended information in a photograph, probably because whoever wrote Google Drive figured, well, it's not a photo sharing site. Google's thinking, we really prefer you upload it to our photo sharing site rather than Google Drive, so please do so. So when I display the image in Google Drive, it doesn't have any of this extended information. You know, like the GPS, like how it was. It has the date, but it doesn't have anything else. But that's just a display issue because I can download it. And when I download it to my computer and then open it up, all of the EXIF extended information is still there, even though I'm downloading it not from Google Photos, but from Google Drive. So that's good news. It's not stripping the information out. The file is, in fact, unchanged when I copy it over to Google Photos. So I guess the answer, Robert, is copy it over to Google Photos if it's your business. Store it there. Keep it there. The original file, EXIF extended information, is still there. It's just not visible in Google Drive because the Google Drive viewer doesn't show it. That's my carefully crafted conclusion. But of course, 8888, ask Leo if you dispute that or have a better idea, or you can go into the chat room and explain it too. On we go to Marty in Los Angeles. Hey, Marty, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. Long time listener, first time caller.
Welcome. Thank you.
Okay. Here's my situation. We have three phones. Verizon is our carrier. And on the three phones, we've downloaded the WhatsApp.
Yes.
Because my wife and my son, they're going to Europe, and I'm going to remain in the United States.
It's a messaging app that allows you to use data, not SMS, to talk to one another.
Right, exactly. But here's the problem. There's no problem. We have two Note 4s and one LG G3. No problem with the LG G3 and no problem with one of the Note 4s. But on the other Note 4, okay, if when I call that phone, it shows up as a different contact. In other words, it doesn't show my name. All right.
I got
it. You got it? And it registers,
right.
Okay, on that particular contact that it shows, showing my phone number and the other phone number.
Yeah, sometimes this happens with contact lists. I would guess that this third phone, so the way it knows who's calling on WhatsApp is it looks up in the contact list. It says, well, whose phone number is this? It doesn't know. You're not identifying yourself when you call via WhatsApp. It's just looking up the phone number. So my guess is that the contact list on that third phone has somehow, have you looked at the contact that it's identifying the call as being from and to see if your phone number is in it?
It is as one of the other
right.
numbers.
For this other person, right? So you're calling, but some person named Joey shows up on the WhatsApp screen.
Right.
Go look at Joey's contact on that Note 4 and see if your phone number is in there. If it is, delete it from Joey's contact because it shouldn't be in there. It's not Joey's phone number.
But how did it get onto Joey's?
Oh, this happens all. It's computers. That's how. It got munged. That's the technical term. It got munged. It happens to me all the time where just, you know, it's a database. And if the database gets a little messed up, sometimes one of the common culprits for this is the ability to merge contacts. Which I use a lot because I don't want 13 contacts for the same person. And since WhatsApp and a lot of other things, including Samsung's contact database, will not just use stuff you enter, but will look it up in Facebook and LinkedIn and other places, including WhatsApp, it's very easy to get multiple entries for a single contact. Sometimes the software automatically merges it. Sometimes you have to ask it to. But in that process, you can get some cross-pollinization of data.
Okay, now, but here's the thing. What I've done is, I've deleted that contact just to see that maybe that's what was messing this whole thing up.
Oh, good. All right.
And then another contact would show up.
That is one messed up database.
Leo, yeah. You'll be off my list.
Yeah, I know. And that's
you're going to show up eventually.
And that's why you're going to get down to me. It does it alphabetically. It looks for the phone number. First place it finds it goes, oh, that's Joe. So and that's why it's only happening on that one Note 4. That one has its database messed up. How would you do that? That's an interesting question. How would you fix that? Kind of starting over, I guess, would be one way to do it.
I've deleted the app about 5 different times.
Not the app, because it's the app looking it up in the contact database. So you actually probably should do, first of all, check to see where WhatsApp is getting the contact information from. If it's getting it from, it probably is also getting it from Facebook, who owns WhatsApp, and other places. So this is, you know, we all have many contact lists, and as a convenience, many contact programs merge contact lists from multiple sources together, which adds to the confusion. You could, for instance, go in and delete all your Google contacts. That's where, on any Android device, that's the primary place that database is. You could say, oh, let me find my phone number in there. Oh, let's take it out of Joe, delete it. And then Facebook would put it right back, right? Because it's been synced now to all these other places as well. So it's a little tricky to figure out where the error is coming from, because even if you fix it, it can get propagated back again. So I would start with Google Contacts.
Okay.
So go online to contacts.google.com for that person's account on that, you know, that whoever owns that phone, go to their account, check there, and make sure that your phone number isn't in that other person's contact. Does that make sense?
Yes.
And then if you fix it there, eventually, won't happen right away, the Samsung phone will sync up with Google Contacts and will make that change. It will delete that phone number. But you might want to check in the settings for contacts, the settings for the phone, the settings for WhatsApp to see what other contact databases it's checking. And that's why it's complicated. Because you can't you may not be able to just delete it in one place. You might have to delete it in several places. Does that all make sense?
I had another person call into that phone and it showed up perfectly. But he's not even in that because he wasn't even on that contact list.
Right. So there's other contact lists. It might be using Facebook, right?
This is right.
By the way, you're not alone. This is a really common issue. Sometimes somebody will call me and I get my name and face. That's really confusing. Why am I calling me?
Right. Why would you want that?
Why am I calling me? So I think that it's just going to take some detective work, figuring out all the different contacts, databases that this WhatsApp application on this phone is checking, and then fixing it in as many places as you can.
I see. Okay.
Hey, so they're going to Europe and you're staying home?
Yeah.
What a raw deal. How'd that happen?
It's called married life, Leo.
Man.
Someone's got to go to work every day.
You got to pay for the trip. That's right.
Exactly.
Dad stays home. Well, where are they going?
Well, they're going to Lithuania.
Wow.
Iceland.
Oh, fun.
Czech Republic.
It's kind of a Baltic cruise.
Yeah, Finland, you know.
Have a wonderful trip. And you're smart to get WhatsApp. Just remember, it is using data. You don't want to use the data from your carrier, your cell carrier. You want to use Wi-Fi. And if they're not on Wi-Fi, make sure you turn off data roaming so it doesn't accidentally charge you. And it can be very expensive for international data. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Safe trip.
You're out.
All right, so somebody gave me a link. How Google Drive works with Google Photos. We'll put this in the show notes. This is great. Chat room to the rescue. You can use Google Photos to edit, share photos and videos, organize albums, search by date, place, blah, blah, blah. You can use Google Drive. Yeah, this doesn't explain where the EXIF stuff goes. So I'm going to stand by what my answer on that one, which is, no, I didn't. Okay, I'll do one more thing. One more test, which is to upload a photo to Google Drive. I just want to make sure that Google Drive isn't stripping EXIF information. It's not displaying it, this we know. And one of the tests I did was to copy a photo by dragging it from my Google Photos into my drive. And there you see, let me show you. There you see, I dragged it from Google Photos into my drive. And there you see it as part of Google Drive. And in fact, yes, I could see the photo, but I don't see any of the extended information. But let's try this. Let me upload a photo to Google Drive and see if upload something with, how do I do that? Upload something that I know has EXIF information. I just want to add a file. Link. Yeah, I want to add a file. How do I do that? How do I do that? My drive. I'd want to upload something to my drive. Upload file. All right. I'm going to upload an image that has EXIF information in it. Everything did. This does. All right. We're going to upload it to Google Drive. Uploading it to Google Drive. There it is. Okay. Still no EXIF information there. What if I copy it to Google Photos? Can I do that? No. But if I doubt, actually, you know what? I'm going to do a different one. This is confusing. Let me get a different photo from Google Photos. Okay. Here's a picture of my June oven cooking steak. Okay. There it is. This picture of the June oven cooking steak has EXIF information. Yes. Okay. Now I'm going to go to Google Drive. I am going to upload a picture of steak. Where is it? There it is. With EXIF. Uploading it. Okay. Here's some steak. There's some steak. Okay. Now, no EXIF information there. But if I download it and go to my downloads, and this will be Steak Picture 2, and open that up, still has EXIF. Okay, good. All right, so here's the conclusion. That was a lot of work. Google Drive does not change the file in any way. The EXIF information is still there. It merely doesn't display it when you're using the Google Drive interface. End of story. But the EXIF information is still there. If you were to download it or move it somewhere else, it would still be with it. You just can't see it. Uncle Bick did the same thing, same result. So that's the issue. It's merely the interface to Google Drive is not displaying the EXIF. Case closed. In my opinion, that closes this case. Now, I'm going to take out my frustration by attacking another village. Well, hey, 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 how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography. In fact, we're going to do that in just a little bit. Chris Marquardt will be joining us, our home theater guru, about half past the hour. 8888 Ask, not home theater, digital photography guru. 8888 Ask Leo. That is the phone number if you want to call with a question, a comment, a suggestion. 888-827-5536. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. Outside that area, Skype works fine. You can always call us. You just have to use Skype out, you know, the one that lets you call phone numbers. Again, 888-827-5536. Moving on to Barbara in Los Angeles. Thanks for hanging on, Barbara. Leo Laporte here.
Oh, yeah, Leo.
Hi.
Hi. My first time talking to you.
Well, it's a pleasure to talk to you. Thank you for calling.
Lee, I want you to know that there was a time in my life you saved my life.
Oh, dear.
And you don't even know it.
I don't even know. What did I do? What happened? What happened?
Well, it was back around 2000 when you had your other show.
Wow, that was a long time. 16 years ago I helped you?
Yes, yes.
You were doing the call for help show. And
exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was on a remote island in Alaska, and the population was about 1,000.
Wow.
And for a girl growing up in L.A., that was quite an adjustment.
I bet it was.
And you're my lifeline.
So you were a geek, and you said, finally, I can find some of my people on the television.
Well, you know, you're such a decent person.
Oh, you're very kind.
Really, you are. And I'm pretty sure you affect many people.
Oh, aren't you sweet?
In such a positive way, because you are such a decent person.
Well, I love technology, and I love sharing my love for technology with other people. And so thank you. I'm just very fortunate that I'm very touched. Thank you. I'm very fortunate to be able to do that.
I've been wanting to say that to you for years.
Aren't you kind? Thank you. Thank you.
So what my problem is today is that I've been seeing a box coming up on my screen when I wake the computer up from sleep mode.
And what does that box say?
It says, preparing to delete.
That's scary.
Right. And you can't do the X in the box.
What does it say? Does it say what it's preparing to delete?
No, it doesn't.
Just that's all it says is preparing to delete?
Preparing to delete. And I can't hit cancel. I mean, I can hit it, but
nothing
it
happens.
Doesn't respond. And if I click on the X, it doesn't respond. And what's so disturbing is that it doesn't identify itself. So you don't know what it's deleting or who's deleting or what program is involved. And I thought, well, I don't know. It's just maybe one of those quirky things. But then in recent months, I've noticed that I'm missing important data from my computer.
Uh-oh.
Some that I've paid money for, seminars. And
hey, well, now what version of Windows are you running?
7.
Okay.
Yeah, I wasn't sure I wanted to switch over to 10, so I waited. I'm kind of sorry I waited now.
Preparing to delete is a normal Windows 7 dialog box. You know, it says that as it goes through the files that you have asked to be deleted before to index them. And then it does this as soon as...
I don't delete that much myself, though, Leo.
Yeah, but it does this as soon as you turn on the computer. And does it do it every single time?
Just about. But interesting... It has slowed down since I've tried to find a solution. I've even called Microsoft, and they didn't want to help unless I paid them to.
So have you looked into your recycle bin? Have you opened it up lately?
Not lately.
Okay. So it could be that you... I'm trying to figure out what's triggering this deletion. So it could be somebody doing something bad to you, of course. And I'm sure that's what you're suspecting.
My screen acts like it's under someone else's control at times.
Does the mouse move by itself?
I don't notice the mouse moving so much.
So normally, the way it works, if you're going to do this yourself, is you drag files into the recycle bin.
Yeah.
Or you press the delete key, and they're moved there, but they're not deleted yet. They just sit in the recycle bin. And it's only when you say empty recycle bin that it starts to say preparing for delete and then showing
that.
It is conceivable if you've never, ever, ever entered your recycle, emptied your recycle bin, that it's full.
Oh, no. I do empty it at periodically.
Okay.
Yeah. And I'm checking it now. But we won't wait for that. My computer's a little slow.
Yeah, it's going to go through. So that means there's a lot of stuff in there. Here's what I would try. Empty the recycle bin, presuming that everything that's in there you don't want. I'm just going to assume that. Sometimes people accidentally drag stuff to the recycle bin and then say, oh, I wish that's why they have it.
Yeah.
Or I know people who use it as a kind of safe storage, like, well, no one will ever know I have this if I put it in the recycle bin. And then they just never empty their trash, and they just drag it out when they need it. But I would empty it, presuming you haven't done the first two, empty the recycle bin. Now, once that's empty, you shouldn't see that preparing to delete anymore. If you continue to see that, then I do think there's something going on in your system.
Yeah. So then how do I get rid of it?
Well, it depends what it is. I mean, generally speaking, in fact, it wouldn't hurt to do this. The best and only sure way to clean a system up that's got malware on it is to literally nuke it. Well, not literally.
Okay.
Figuratively nuke it.
I know what you mean.
By erasing the drive and reinstalling Windows. That would help with your speed issue, by the way. I bet you've never done that since you've bought the computer.
I haven't.
Yeah.
It's about 4 years old.
Yeah, every few years. Actually, I do it maybe several times a year. I like to start over.
I'm afraid of losing programs that I want that are important.
Yeah, because if you don't have all the programs, nowadays that's less of an issue because programs usually are downloaded and activated with a serial number. As long as you save the serial number, you can re-download the program and reinstall it.
I mean like extensions and that sort of thing that you want to keep that have been helpful.
Right, and you'll have to rebuild the whole thing from scratch.
Yeah, that's a pain.
Well, so I guess what we want to do is figure out what's starting up automatically, if that's the case. But first, empty the recycle bin and just see if that's it. It just may be that it's so much stuff in the recycle bin that it's not getting emptied. So let it run and empty everything. And then I would say, at this point, it's going to require a little bit of expertise to figure out if there is something bad running on your system. A couple of quick things you can do. Microsoft puts a tool on all Windows versions called the Malicious Software Removal Tool that catches the well-known bad stuff.
I've run that.
And you have run that.
Yeah.
You have to do it. To do a thorough scan, you have to manually run it. It's updated every month with the Windows Update.
I've
But you've run it manually. You did, you do Windows key R and you type MRT, hit return, do a thorough scan, and nothing was found.
I don't do that often. I've done it maybe once in a four-year period.
Yeah, do it now.
And it went forever.
Yeah, it will. Your drive's not full, is it?
No, no. I'm only using about an eighth of my drive.
All right. Well, once you've run MRT, so here's my prescription. Empty the recycle bin. Run MRT and then see if things are better.
All right.
Okay. And I'm going to take a break, but I'll talk to you off the air for a moment here. Oh. Hold on. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
You're out.
Thank you. So, yeah, we're off the air now. We're still in the podcast, though.
All right.
I'm just trying to think why you're seeing that every time.
Yeah, every time. I mean, it even deleted my Kindle program and the contents. I had to rebuild that.
Wow. So, and you know it's gone. It's not moved somewhere or whatever.
Right. Like, because I did a search for the programs with Kindle, and nothing came up.
Wow.
Except for some small program connected to it that it still didn't help me.
Well, if you brought it... Okay, here's... I don't actually agree with this procedure, but if you brought it into a shop, this is what they would do. They would first look to see what's running in the background, and they might do that by either using the task manager, Control-Alt-Delete, and running the task manager.
Yeah.
And then see if you recognize everything. That takes a little bit of an experienced hand because the programs aren't named intelligently, so you might look at a task and go, well, I don't know what that is, but it's actually important. The other thing you can do, there is a program that you can use to do that, that you can download from Microsoft. They have a site called SysInternals, and they have a couple
of... Say that again?
SysInternals. If you Google Microsoft...
S-Y-S?
S-Y-S Internals.
Okay.
And Process Explorer will let you look at what's running in the background, and that's useful.
Okay.
So they will do that, and then if they don't see anything obvious, they'll run a program, and this is the part I kind of disagree with, called Malware Bytes. It's like malicious software removal tool, but it's a commercial program. It's a little more aggressive. It won't get everything. That's my problem with it.
Right.
And make sure. And the other problem is when I tell people this, I worry because there are other bad guys posing as malware bytes. So you have to get it.
Oh, yeah.
You got a pencil?
Oh.
We'll put a link on the website, too, Tech Guy Labs. It's MalwareBytes. They spell it funny. Malwarebytes.org. And there you can download that for free and run it. And it will tell you a lot about, it will give you some false positives. It'll say, oh, these are cookies and stuff. But if you let it clean things up and everything is better now and you don't notice anything going on, then you probably could breathe a sigh of relief and go on.
All right.
But ultimately, it's always better if you can to format and start over, you know?
Yeah. I was afraid of that.
Yeah, but given that you don't want to have to reconstitute your whole ecosystem, let's try these things. That's what they would do in a shop.
Okay.
And then they might as a final thing run an antivirus against it, but I wouldn't do that.
All right. Now, I told you that I did the MRT once in 4 years, but because I've only done it once, I don't remember how to
do it. Yeah, let me tell you how you do it. Okay. So there's on the keyboard next to the space bar, there's a Windows logo key.
Right.
You press that and R at the same time. That'll open up Windows R. It'll open up the command box, and you just type MRT and hit return.
Okay.
And then when that window opens up, you'll see there's a checkbox for a thorough scan, and I would do the thorough scan and then go get a cup of coffee.
Okay. Now, when I did the control window and R, it brought up MS config. Should I ignore
it? No, I mean, it's already typed in there. Just the Windows key and R at the same time, like Shift R, only Windows key R.
Okay.
And then type MRT. Yeah, put MRT in there and run that.
Okay, great.
It's not super complete, but it might, you know, it's what Microsoft. Hey, I got to run.
Okay.
Good luck. Thank you. Call me back if that doesn't all work, okay?
All right. Thank you.
Right. Thanks, Barbara. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888. Ask Leo. That's the phone number. I talked a little bit more off the air with Barbara. It's so tough. You know, a couple of things come to mind here. First of all, Windows is crazy complicated. It's a kind of a nightmare operating system. Mac is close behind. And it's unfortunate so many of us are saddled with something so complex. And it's almost as if you're required to tune your own car, right? It's almost as required that you have to understand how a internal combustion engine works, and you have to fix it yourself. Worse, because then there are all these other people trying to break it all the time. So I'm not fond, frankly, of Windows, even Macintosh, for normal people who don't want to spend a lot of time becoming computer experts. And you've heard me recommend it so many times before. For most people, a better choice would be a Chromebook. A Chromebook is just like a laptop, but instead of running the very complicated operating systems, the general purpose operating systems, Windows and Mac OS, it runs something from Google called Chrome OS, which hides all the complexity from you. You don't see it, you can't touch it, you can't mess with it, nor can the bad guys. It's limited in capability because it's basically just the Chrome browser. And anything you can do in a browser, any extensions you can add to a browser, you can use. There are newer Chromebooks can also run apps from the Android store, which gives you a much broader universe of applications. But, you know, it's not a computer as we normally would understand a computer with Microsoft Office on it and, you know, stuff like that, Photoshop. But I believe from 99% of the computer using public, that's plenty. What a Chromebook does is all you need. And
I can't find the answer to the question I heard.
I said the word computer, didn't I? She heard me. My Alexa, my Amazon Echo. Sorry, I just triggered everybody else's. Is set to listen for the word computer. And she hears it a lot on this show. I'm going to have to fix that.
Sorry, I can't find the answer to the question I heard.
Could you press, you have to lift the puppet off of it. I've covered it with a puppet. Just the microphone dot, that'll make it so it stops listening. One of the reasons I think the iPad was a good choice, we got it. Thank you, John. Lisa's here. She fixed it for me. One of the reasons the iPad was so popular is because it, like a Chromebook, is very simple. But I think it's overly expensive. And it is. I like having a real keyboard. So an iPad would be a decent choice. But the advantage of the Chromebook is if malware gets on it, and really there's a very limited subset of malware that can get on it. Mostly it's browser extensions, you know, badly written or maliciously written browser extensions. If that gets on there, there's a command called PowerWash, and it goes... But that's the second drawback to the Chromebook is a lot of what you're doing is in the cloud, lives on Google's servers. That's why the PowerWash works. You just log back into your Google account and everything's still there. So a Chromebook isn't a great choice if you don't have always-on internet. You know, but nowadays, pretty much, you know, anybody's using a computer has always-on internet, right? That's kind of what you want anyway. So I guess for somebody like Barbara... A Chromebook would probably be a great choice. She said she reads Kindle books. You can do that. I'm not sure what format those seminars are in, but chances are good a Chromebook would allow her to look at that. And because Chromebooks are rapidly becoming very popular, more and more companies that create content or have seminars or whatever are making their software Chromebook compatible. So I think a Chromebook is a very good choice. If you're looking for a new computer, the default for so many years has been Windows. And you can see, I mean, if you heard her call, you see the problem. It's painful. I mean, I just scratched the surface of the things one must do to clean up a Windows machine when it starts to act up. It's just a mess. It's just a mess. And I feel for Barbara because, you know, you've got a big investment in your computer of not just money, but time and learning and software. And, oy, It's just, but it's so hard to fix this kind of thing. And we're at the, you know, you really don't want to be at the mercy of a repair shop because skills vary among these geeks. Some of them are very good. If you're lucky and you got a really good guy or somebody will come to your house or maybe a family member, your niece or your daughter will knows how to do this, well, then you're all right. Then you're all right until they get tired of helping you. 8888 Ask Leo. You know, the chat room has been very helpful with lots of ideas, Uncle Bix. I wonder if Barbara has the empty recycle bin on shutdown turned on. Yeah, maybe. Maybe that's it. That's why I think the first thing to do is look at that recycle bin and empty it. See if that fixes the pop-up. It's not a typical pop-up for malware. The problem with malware is it's often poorly written. And this is even worse. So, you know, if malware is well written, it does one thing, which is mess with you. If it's poorly written, it does many things, all of which mess with you, including making your machine unreliable and weird. And unfortunately, a lot of malware is just not well written. All right, Chris Marquardt coming up in just a bit. I'm wondering if there's anything else to say about Barbara. Every few weeks, we'll get a call like that from a nice person, a normal person who's trying to survive using a very complicated PC. And it's so complicated. It's not like there's you go, oh, you know, there's a guy down the street who could fix that. Maybe there is. Maybe there isn't. Maybe the guy down the street will just make it worse. Oh, Dr. Mom's telling me that, well, there was an interesting story. Her husband had a website designed, and the guy locked it. And fortunately, the website files were backed up with Carbonite. So they could just thumb their nose at the bad developer. That's nice. That's nice. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Chris Marquardt, the photo guy. Coming up in just a bit. 8888 Ask Leo. I am Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Our show today brought to you by those great folks at Epson. Now, this is something Lisa loves. She loves her Epson EcoTank printer. Epson has decided to kind of turn the entire inkjet printing industry on its head. And I'm sure the other companies are hating them for it because they decided, you know, forget the whole cartridge thing. We're just going to put big tanks on the printer and, you know, let you buy ink once every 2 years and that'll be that. Never run out of ink in the middle of a job again. And by the way, when you go to refill the tank on the EcoTank printer in 2019... the ink you save up to 80% with the low-cost replacement bottles. We have the ET4550. That's the one you see on the screen I'm showing if you're watching the video. 11,000 pages. Comes with 11,000 black and white pages worth of ink or 8,500 color pages worth of ink. That's enough for 2 years, about 50 cartridge sets. And you can get, I mean, there you have the EcoTank comes in a variety of inkjet printers from Epson. Big, you know, the inexpensive Expression, the big honkin' work group printer, the 16,500. That has, by the way, 11,000 color pages in its tank. There's an even bigger one, the R4640, with 20,000 pages of ink in the box. And it's just great. You get, because you have the Precision Core engine, you get auto two-sided printing, crisp black and white. That's because it's 40 million droplets per second. 30-page auto document feeder. It prints wirelessly. Not just from, you know, on your Wi-Fi network from your computer, but it supports all the tablet and smartphone printing standards, too. You can either, yeah, of course, then this is a, you know, like the 4550, a multifunction printer. So I can scan to Google Cloud, for instance. It's got a great sheet feeder. Makes it very easy. When I want to share a document with somebody, I don't even scan it to my local computer and email it or whatever. I just scan right to Google Cloud. And then send them a link. 2016 Small Biz Windows Printer of the Year. CES 2016 Innovation Awards Honoree. This is just a great printer. Find out more at Epson.com/EcoTank. EPSON.com/EcoTank. Use the Epson EcoTank today to transform the way your home, your office, your work group prints for the best combination of ease and value. It's Epson EcoTanks. Epson. Exceed your vision. That's a nice printer. Love that printer. Chris, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
Yay! How are you today?
And you can hear me. Good.
I can hear you.
Very good.
All right. All right.
So, are we still up for two additional ones after the
Not
end of the show?
Not today, because there's this American ritual called the Super Bowl.
Oh, that's on today. Okay.
Are you here next week? Can we do it?
I'm here next week.
All right, next week, I promise. I apologize. I forgot about the That's Super Bowl. Fine. So we're going right into Twit right after the radio show. We're not going to stop, and we're just going to go right to the radio, to the Twit show.
The Super Bowl. That's that's the thing with the egg-shaped thing.
We call it hand egg. there are fans of American football in Germany, yes?
Oh, yeah. Oh, sure.
The NFL's done everything it can to globalize the game.
They
play a game every year in London and...
I don't believe it's that big in Germany.
No, because you have soccer.
I see more baseball clubs in Germany than football clubs. Yep.
God, baseball's such an arcane game. It amazes me that they can figure that out.
I still don't get it.
Yeah.
And football, I attended both games in the U.S., but both I just, They try to explain them to me, but just... didn't register with
football. Looks like 5-year-olds playing soccer. It's just everybody running around in this big blob of people, and it takes you really have to study the game over many years as a child to understand
really
the patterns of it. Well, it's a beautiful game.
I was in Ireland and I attended a game of hurling.
Hurling is where they throw that big log. No, that's the caber toss.
No, that's in Scotland, I think.
Hurling
is like it's like football, soccer.
Oh, not familiar with it.
But with a stick and a little ball.
Oh yeah, it's a curved stick.
Everyone has a stick.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's really interesting. Oh yeah, Dr. Mom, I'm well aware of the commercials, the Super Bowl commercials. And I think a lot of people watch it just for the commercials. It's definitely a big thing that draws people in. So I might go look some of those up. But not the Super Bowls. I think you can't even get the Super Bowl without paying lots for it. Is that so? Football, 15 minutes of actual playtime stretched out over 3 hours? It can't be that short. Oh, and Dr. Frost looked up hurling. Yeah. It's really interesting. I think in hurling, they can take 3 steps and then they have to... They can walk 3 steps with the ball in hand, and then they have to kind of fling it in there with that stick. And then, I apologize to all Irish people who are listening right now. You're probably going, he has no idea. The German has no idea. But I did watch, when was it, 2000? I think I actually got into the finals. And Galway won, I remember that. The hurling finals in, I think, 2000.
Best game in the world. Aussie rules football.
Uh-huh.
No, I'm wrong. The best game in the world, footy, which is Australian league football or something. I don't know. I'm a fan of the Rabbits. All right. Here we go. Here he is, our great photographer friend, Chris Marquardt, the photo guy. Joins us every week to talk about digital photography and Bundesliga, because he's a big, because it's Bundesliga Day, the Super Bundesliga. No, it's not. He lives in Germany, and I guess the Super Bowl is not as big there as it is here.
Not really.
No. You know, have you ever been a sports photographer, though? Have you ever done that?
Just occasionally.
It's
fun. On the sidelines, but never in a real... In the real function as a dedicated sports photographer now.
You have to be dedicated because, A, you have to know the game. You take your chances because you are really on the sidelines at football. Sometimes you get clobbered. But you also, the pressure's on. If you're shooting for Sports Illustrated, the big game, and you're on the sideline, you got to get a good shot.
Oh, and you have to get it to the publication really quickly. So they have, with the bigger games, like in Super Bowl, I think they have, it's a huge operation. The whole
they have runners.
It's a massive operation. They have runners. I think they tried networking, but that wasn't fast enough. So they have runners that take the cards back and forth.
Yeah, there's usually a person wearing a tunic of some kind standing behind you. They have two jobs, actually. While you're shooting, they're watching to make sure that you're not going to get clobbered. They actually hold your belt, and they will pull you out of the way if a lineman comes hurtling towards you. And then after the play, you hand them the memory card, and they go running back to wherever it is and upload it. So they
and sports photography is also one of the few areas where your kind of camera is actually important.
Oh, yes.
You need a camera with a high shutter speed. You need a camera that just can handle that. Yeah.
It kind of baffles me because I always thought Nikon would be perfect for that because it's got the fast focus. But you see a lot of those gray Canon lenses on the sidelines.
Well, those gray lenses are also good marketing because they're very visible.
Yeah, can't miss them. So what do you want to, besides Bundesliga, what do you want
to... Actually, I want to talk about gear today. And the thing is, I'm still preparing for Siberia. End of February, I'll be in on Lake Baikal for 2 weeks.
Wow.
And there are two ways about going on a tour like this, on a trip like this. And the first would be to travel light. And you know me, that's kind of my thing. I try to not take too much gear with me. Or the other extreme is to travel lots. Now, for Siberia, I will actually bring lots. And the reason is I've been there. Last year, I know what to expect. And last year, there were a few situations where I was just missing some focal lengths to shoot with. And I couldn't swap lenses because it was too cold. I had big gloves on. And so this time, I decided to bring a few more things to kind of stock up and... I just want to briefly talk with you about what I'm doing in order to kind of keep myself from going crazy with all the stuff. So dedicated two bodies this time. I did bring two bodies for quite a while, but the smaller one, the crop one, was the SL1, small, tiny Canon camera. And while it's good, I was missing some of the... Well, I was missing some of the speed that I would get from other cameras. So I upgraded this just recently to the 70 Mark II.
When you say speed, photographers use the word speed interchangeably. What do you mean speed?
The speed of the frames per second.
Okay.
With the SL1, you get, I don't know, 3 to 4 frames a second. With the 70, you get 10 frames a second.
Yeah.
And that is a difference. And we will encounter situations where that will make a lot of sense.
Well, I can see that in sports, for instance. You might turn on the burst mode because, you know, you don't know exactly what the exact moment's going to be that it looks the best. But,
exactly. But
Lake Baikal, I mean, isn't stuff frozen? How much burst do you need?
Well, it depends, because we will also be in the cities. We will be around the lake, not just on the lake.
When do you use burst mode? When do you use that most?
Well, imagine something moving and you want that motion and you want to end up with the choice of a frame of that motion that is the best one. So you would shoot a burst of maybe 5-6 frames and then choose the one that is the best. And there will be opportunities for, I don't know, ice crashing on the lake and other things that...
Do you leave it turned
where
on?
Where this might make sense. The burst mode?
Yeah.
I usually set that to a slower burst mode. You can change the speed because the highest speed, you cannot just take a single shot if you want.
It's really hard. I did that
for
a while.
You will fire to a
shot. And you go, oh, no, I don't want all those images. So you set it to slow, but you don't leave it in single shot mode most of the time.
No.
Because you can take a single shot in the slow burst, but if you hold it down, it goes into burst mode.
Yes. So that's two cameras I will carry with me. Now, in order to carry them, that's one of the ways to kind of keep my sanity there. I've actually now looked at a whole bunch of different kind of carrying systems. Because if you have two cameras and they're both kind of on the heavy side, you have to have your hands free. So you have to have a way to keep the camera, I don't know, dangling off your side or some way that will give you enough freedom to operate the camera that you're working with at the time. So that's one of the things that I would recommend if someone wants to do that.
You got to tell me. I got to know which one.
It's the R strap.
Oh, I love it. I have it.
And they have one that has two straps and you can carry two cameras at the same time. So that's the two cameras. Another way to make sure I don't go crazy is that I meticulously configured both of the cameras to be as close as possible. They are both by the same company, and they are similar enough that you can kind of configure them. You know, you will customize a camera over time. You will go, okay, I want this button to do that, and I want that button to do this. And when I'm through one of these cameras, it's probably 50% different than if you take it out of the box, just to make it convenient for me to work with this. So I spent an hour sitting here, both cameras in front of me, making sure that when I press this button, both cameras do the same thing, if at all possible. So I can now kind of interchange them. I don't have to relearn, or I don't have to learn operating two different cameras. They are pretty much the same, and that's really, really key for me, which is why I would probably also not take cameras from two different manufacturers, because that would mean twice the amount of stuff to learn, because you will inevitably get confused and miss shots because you have to think about or find out how to do something. So two cameras, just learn it once and that will work. The other thing that a photographer friend recently told me, and I'm completely on his side, is he said, if you're comfortable, you can shoot longer.
Ah, that's and true.
It sounds like the most natural thing in the world. But then on the other hand, I see a lot of photographers who are like, oh, I want to be kind of the independent lone wolf. It doesn't have to be comfortable. But the moment it's not comfortable, you will not shoot as much. So comfy clothes, warm clothes, good gloves, proper stuff to deal with the temperature, good boots and things is important, so you can get out of the car and not just stay for 5 minutes and then it gets too cold. So stay comfy and keep the cameras kind of on the same level. That together is probably going to keep the cognitive load low enough for me to be able to do it.
Yeah, you're trying to create art here, not look like a walking one-man band. I mean, so it's kind of a balance of the right tools, right technology, but being nimble and comfortable at the same time.
And I'll bring in an additional 360-degree camera just
for fun.
Just for fun. So
you got to write this up, Chris. You've got to write this up. How I Do It by Chris Marquardt. You'll find please do.
I'll do a video about it.
Okay. Yeah, he's like me and unlike to write. DiscoverTheTopFloor.com, the website for more of Chris's workshops. Lots of his great photos, too. He joins us every Sunday to talk photography, one of my favorite subjects. Someday I'd just like to know what strap, bag, you know, the side gear that you use. But we'll have to save that for another day, because we're going to go back to the phones right after this. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
You're out.
Yeah, I just, Trey sent me this Peak Design messenger bag, and I'm trying to, it's not my cup of tea exactly, but I'm trying to get used to, it's designed like to be very functional. So I'm just, to find the perfect camera bag.
My problem with camera bags is that the moment they have too many pockets, I start forgetting where I put what.
Yeah.
I have in the past bought a filter twice because I thought I lost it. I found it in some camera bag
totally
in the 12th pocket somewhere down. I need things inside. We have this saying in Germany, out of sight, out of mind.
Right.
Do you have the same?
Yep, same phrase, yeah.
And I'm really prone to that. So I need to have things right there where I see them, and then everything's fine. So that's my camera bag recommendation, or that's my camera bag prerequisite, that it doesn't have too many pockets.
Life was good when I was just carrying one camera, like the Leica Q or something like that, because then I could have a little bag. It didn't even look like a camera bag, which is another good thing. But then if you want to, but now that I'm doing the 5D Mark IV, I think that's what I'm taking to the Galapagos. I'm going to need the monster bag just for the lenses.
Well, another thing that helps and that has helped me on photo tours is keep it organized. Put everything always at the same spot in your camera bag.
Right.
Make sure you don't swap things around, because then you'll be lost. And if you have your filters always in the left front, then you'll be able to find them.
I feel like this Peak Design is really the one I'm going to use, but I just have to I have to really spend a lot of time with it, and exactly that, get a workflow with it, so that I know.
I know people who love it. I know people who can't deal with it.
Yeah,
it's a pretty divisive bag.
I use their strap now, and I really like their strap.
Oh, Peak Design is yeah,
good yeah, because they can because I have so you can switch it to a side strap or you could over the shoulder strap.
I use their tripod plates, which there's one's called the Pro Plate, which fits on both Manfrotto and Arca Swiss.
Ah.
So you can put it on this way on a Manfrotto and on this way on an Arca Swiss. And that has helped me a lot in the past. And then you can get a little screw on the bottom, not this one, but there is another one, I think, also by Peak Design, which will then allow you to have the camera, the tripod plate on while using an R-strap. So...
Oh, that's my problem with the R-strap, is it takes up the tripod hole.
Well, in this case, you can use both at the same time.
What is that? Who's that from?
Well, the plate is by Peak Design, and the little thing that goes in here is, I have to look it up. It's also by Peak Design, and it's just a replacement for that little screw in here.
Is it this thing?
No, the screw. It's just the screw. It's just a screw with a little loop that folds down, and it's called the...
I use the Really Right Stuff camera tripod plates, but the problem is they're specific to it. Every camera body has a different one. So I never... You know, it's like I can't... It's frustrating. I have to buy new plates for every camera. But then it's really easy to use it with a tripod. It snaps right in.
Trying to find that little hook...
That's the problem.
It's a Pro Drive screw adapter.
Pro Drive screw adapter.
Pro Drive in one word.
All right.
And that has enough of a loop to be able to hook in an R strap.
Oh, that's also from Peak. Okay.
Yep. I think it's just $10.
Oh, you put the R strap through that.
Yep.
Oh, clever. All right, Chris.
All right.
See you later.
Next week.
Bye.
Take care.
We'll do two or three next week. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888, ask Leo. Don't forget, Chris, as always, has given us an assignment, and I love doing this. It's not a competition. There are no prizes. It's just for fun. The idea is to get you out in the world taking pictures. And so the way this works is you're going to take a picture illustrating the word or concept. Oh, I forgot what it is now. Is it square? You take the picture. I'm going to have to log into the Flickr group because that's where you go. You upload it to our Flickr group, the Tech Guy group on Flickr.com, which, by the way, is free. All you have to do is let me just log into my Flickr account and I can tell you in a moment. Is it break? That's right. It's break. Break. Thank you. Break. B-R-E-A-K. Whatever that means to you. So take a picture illustrating that word, that idea. Upload it to Flickr, to the Tech Guy group. Put break, B-R-E-A-K, in the tag so we'll know it's a submission. And in a couple of weeks, Chris is going to pick three of the most interesting to a highlight. But really, the goal is just to say, go out and take pictures that illustrate break, whatever that means to you. 8888 Ask Leo's the phone number. We're going back to the phones right now. And Arthur, he's on the line in New Hampshire. Hi, Arthur.
Hi, Leo. I got an easy one for you today. I absolutely love the Chromebook. I bought my second model 6 weeks ago, and because I at age 74, I figured this would be the last computer I ever have to buy. I didn't mind spending a bit more money, so I found a 2013 model Google Chromebook Pixel leftover.
Excellent!
In the box.
Excellent.
I paid, I guess, in 2013, those went for about $1,200.
Right.
And I paid about a third of that brand new.
That's an excellent Chromebook because Google built it to show that a Chromebook doesn't have to be poorly manufactured or underpowered. They wanted to show you, if price were no object, what you could do, and you got a good deal on it.
Well, that was my feeling. I watched your short review. I found that shortly after I got the machine. I watched several other YouTube reviews. But my experience, other than loving the machine, the detail is amazing. The screen is unbelievable.
Yeah.
But when I received it, the touch screen didn't work.
Oh.
I got on the phone with tech support, Google, and they got it fixed for me.
Well,
I did a couple of shutdown resets.
Oh, good. Oh, that's fortunate because that's out of support right now. So that was they didn't have to support it, but that's good.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Even though it's brand new?
Well, it isn't brand new. It's the 2013 Chromebook.
Right.
It's new to you.
Okay. Brand new in the box.
Yeah.
New to me.
It's new to you, but they phased out support for it. That was the first Chromebook Pixel, and I think there was one that came out the year after. The other negative on that, I just warn you, is they have announced they are not going to support the Android store on that one. So if you wanted the Android store, you'd need to get a newer Chromebook to do that. All the ones that they're selling this year do support the Android store. But that 2013 Pixel does not.
That's good to know. But my immediate problem, since the touchscreen problem, it's locked up solid twice. I've been able to fix that myself by doing a hard shutdown, which I had to hold the power button for, several seconds, or 6 seconds for it to even shut off.
So you did with them on the phone, you did the complete power wash, right?
Power wash didn't help, but they had me hold the power button and the refresh button.
Yeah, so that's actually, that's doing a complete refresh, even better than a power wash. That's wiping everything and downloading a new operating system onto the system. But I'm disappointed to hear that you're still having crashes, because the other side of that is there's not much you can do to fix it. It's pretty much as is. Unlike a more complicated computer where I could say, well, what you need to do is get the registry editor. There's nothing you can do to Chromebook. Aside from the reset that you did with them, and I guess I would do it again, if it's failing, it probably means there's a hardware problem. Those hangs come from perhaps the SSD is worn out or broken. Something's wrong with it. Your son sold you this, or you got this online?
Oh, no, I bought it online through eBay reseller.
Yeah.
But my current problem, Leo, night before last, the audio quit. It totally dead, quit completely. So last night.
So none of this is, none of, with, I got to tell you.
Again.
Yeah, Arthur, none of this is normal. You got a lemon.
Apparently I did.
Yeah.
Half an hour to no avail.
Yeah, none of this is normal. I'm sorry that. Yeah, I'm sorry that this happened to you, but that is kind of the risk of buying from eBay. I don't know if it really was new in the box or if it was a lemon that they resold. And you can't.
It certainly appeared to be new from the packaging. I think I would have been able to tell if it had been repackaged.
Well, it could just be you got bad luck, you know. Can you return it to the vendor, the seller?
I haven't checked on that yet. Google is going to call me back in the morning, and they tell me the next thing, that the only other thing they can do at a distance is wipe out the operating system and reinstall it.
Well, do that.
That requires a second computer, which I don't have.
Yeah, I've done that. You actually use it. There's a Chrome extension you download that will make a USB key. And then you can redo it. It sounds to me like there's a hardware issue. That's the real problem here.
Huh.
And I don't know if Google will stand by the hardware or not. I mean, one would hope. But this is not typical. I mean, Chromebooks are very reliable. I've never had any issue with any of my Chromebooks, and I've had many, including both that Pixel and its successor, the following year's Chromebook Pixel, which I love. Those are really great Chromebooks, but you got it from a unknown source. It may have been something wrong with it then, or maybe you just got unlucky. I hope that Google will support it. Do you really need a second computer to do what they want to do? I don't think so. Maybe you do. Do you need
they
a down?
Do, I do.
Yeah. Well, if they say
and
you
they,
do, I guess.
You said I also need a USB stick or
right.
a SD card.
Yeah. So basically,
I don't have either one.
Yeah. Basically, what happens is there's a Chrome extension you put on there that sets up a recovery USB key that has the operating system on it. And then you boot to that, you wipe the drive, you're really starting from scratch. It is a great thing to have. If you can get a friend or a buddy to make you the USB stick, it would be well worth the try, and it may fix everything. If not,
send that to me over the internet.
You mean mail you? They could, you know, if you get
I was thinking download it. Could they download it direct to my Chromebook?
Yeah, I get, you know, see, this is why I'm surprised. I thought that you could do this with only a Chromebook, but maybe it does require a second computer. I'm going to have to defer to the folks you're talking to. They know what they want to do. But it's just, you know, any operating system, almost every operating system, you could put the installer on a USB key or an SD card. And, of course, your computer supports both. And then reboot the machine to the USB key. That gives you the opportunity to completely wipe the internal SSD that's built into that Chromebook and start from scratch. I hope that works for you. Because if it doesn't, then you have hardware issues. And frankly, I think that's most likely at this point. You need to find somebody with a computer where you can do this. But I would wait until you talk to them. They may have a way they can help you with it. And I'm sorry that this happened to you, because normally these computers are, this is the reason you get them. Though you don't have to do anything. they just work out of the box. There are some excellent new Chromebooks just emerging. I'm expecting the new Samsung Chromebook Plus, which from Best Buy is going to be available in a week, I believe. And I'll have that, if not next weekend, the weekend after for review. That looks to be the Chromebook to get this year. It has a stylus, touchscreen. It's a convertible, so you can fold it over. It really looks like a nice system, and it runs all the Android apps, which yours will not. So anyway, I hope you get that fixed. I'm sorry that happened to you, Arthur, after I've been selling like crazy, selling these Chromebooks. This is not typical. And frankly, I always say you're taking your chance. Buyer beware when you buy on eBay. Because you just don't know. Some of these guys are competent enough to rewrap everything to make it look like it's brand new, when in fact it was a used lemon. That's why I always buy it from a dealer, because the other thing is the dealer has a strong incentive to take it back and fix it. 888-ASK-LEO, the phone number. We shall return in just a moment. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
You're out.
The thing about the Chromebook Restore, it has to be for that machine. So you need a 2013 Pixel Restore disk. I've done that. I've made it. You know, it's one of the ways you reverse crouton and other things if you're doing it to your, if you're messing with your Chromebook, which I have done. Yeah. I've only been ripped off once on eBay, but it was for a lot of money. But that's the problem, right? Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers and the internet and home theater. Smartphones, smart watches, virtual reality, augmented reality, which I think is more interesting than virtual reality, and all that jazz. 888-ASK-LEO, that's the phone number. If you have a question, a comment, a suggestion, if you would like to get some hand-holding on the information superhighway. That's what we're here for. Doug is on the line from Hollywood. Hello, Doug.
Hey, Leo.
Welcome.
Thank you. You've helped me in the past, and I hope you can figure out my quandary here.
Oh, I hope so, too.
I recently downloaded macOS Sierra 10.12.3.
Yes.
And all of a sudden, my computer's an awful lot slower.
Aye.
And it's thinking a lot, and it's spinning that stupid rainbow-colored circle. and then I'll sometimes have to go into force quit because Safari will say not responding, or some other program not responding. But I've noticed that I now have on, as part of my hard drive, a prompt write to iCloud, iCloud Drive, desktop, and documents. In addition, above it, I have Google Drive, all my files, AirDrop, applications, desktop.
Yeah, that's just the that sidebar. Those are just kind of, you know, useful reminders of places you have stuff stored. Apple, a few versions ago, changed the documents folder, and they didn't really tell anybody. And it was to me, it was extremely annoying to make it really be an iCloud folder. They wanted to be like Chromebooks, you know, where your data is stored in the cloud.
So it's got to go grab it there and then...
Yeah, it's dopey. I turn it off. I don't like it. In the system preferences, you can turn that off in iCloud. But that's not what happened to you. I mean, what did you already have Sierra on there, or?
I had a version of Sierra.
Yeah, you had a previous version.
10.12.3.
Yeah, no, but it's been part of Sierra since the beginning. So that's not new. You maybe just noticed it. I didn't notice it for the longest time because they didn't make a big deal about it. So I don't like that.
I'm looking for it every time that I'm getting this spinning ball.
Well, if you open the documents, it could, you know, if you had slow internet, it could give you a spinning ball. If you open the documents folder, what you're really opening is the iCloud documents folder. Okay. And you can have that synchronized to your hard drive. I prefer not to have it on iCloud, personally. And I wish they had made I don't remember it ever, you know, being announced or said or anything. They just did it. They just did it. And I don't like it. I mean, you shouldn't be, you know, without your permission, storing your documents in the cloud. I mean, that's just not okay.
Well, I thought it was part of using up a lot of memory in my iMovie, which had 92 gigs.
Yikes.
Of crap in it.
Yeah, you might want to clear that out. So, but I don't know if that's why you're seeing this big slowdown. I mean, it could be, and you certainly can turn that off. It could also just be that, you know, it's a coincidence and that your hard drive's starting to flake out a little bit. That's the most common cause of lots of beach balls and slowdowns. Or there could be a file got corrupted in the update process. You know, all of these things can happen. I mean, updating an operating system while you're flying the plane is always fraught with peril. It's surprising it works as well as it does.
All right, so if I go into my preferences and go to system preferences and go to iCloud, they should...
I can't remember exactly where it was. I tell you how it happened to me. So I wanted to start keeping my documents folder stored on my NAS backup. And I was looking, and I had no documents folder. I said, wait a minute, where's my documents folder? And I finally figured out, the iCloud documents folder is my documents folder. And I did not like that. So I turned that off so that I could have a real documents folder. But at some point, and I'm not sure exactly when, it might be with Sierra, I'll have to ask my Mac OS experts, they decided that there was not going to be a local documents folder anymore. It was going to be your iCloud folder.
Oh, great. So that means I can read it on my iPad.
The idea. Yes, exactly. Okay. So, and I think it's also the case that Apple's, realized that their future revenue is going to come from services. You know, this last quarter, Apple's results came out this past week, and they did very well. Number one profit generator, of course, was the iPhone. That's not a surprise. But the number two profit generator was services, iCloud, Apple Pay, and Apple Music. They made $24 billion in the quarter revenue on services.
I think this also coincided with them saying, wait a minute, you don't have enough memory in your iPhone.
Yeah.
$99 a month.
You might want to buy some more. That would be a shame for you to run out.
It's okay yesterday.
I hate to be cynical. It's hard, you know, and I really don't want to be cynical with Apple because Apple has, you know, gotten a pass in the past. But the cynic in me tells me that they said, there's money to be made in these services. Let's just move everything to the cloud.
Mm-hmm.
It does also happen to be that it's more convenient, but it's also less secure. This is another thing, and Apple does not like people to say this. You know, they're really big on encryption and messages encrypted, blah, blah, blah. What they don't tell you is, iCloud's encrypted, except that Apple has the key and will gladly turn it over to law enforcement should they be asked. So your stuff is not private on iCloud. It's stored on their servers, and they hold the key. It's not just you.
So now I've gone into my preferences. Apps that are stored on and data in iCloud will appear here. Desktop and document folders. So if I uncheck that?
Yeah, I wish I, you know, I did this. I don't have a Mac in front of me. I did this at home, and I don't remember exactly how I turned it off, but that sounds right. I would continue to look around. What you don't want is to have your documents folder stored on iCloud.
It looks like my desktop, because
Yes, your desktop, too.
I took off my desktop and put it on my external hard drive, and all of a sudden it said it was downloading it from iCloud.
Yeah. Like, oh, wait a minute. What's it doing in iCloud?
Exactly.
Yeah, why is it there?
All right. Well, yeah. This is sort of making sense now. Thank you for your help.
Yeah, it's a little frustrating. And it may be, you know, the other reason that this is happening now is because most people have fast enough internet that you could do this almost transparently. So, system preference pane, iCloud. Click on the options to the right of iCloud Drive, Solid Pixel tells me. And all of it is there. Uncheck, as you said, uncheck the desktop and documents folders. And is that bizarre that they just did that without telling us? Or maybe I missed the pop-up where they said, oh, by the way, you may remember a documents folder on your hard drive. Well, it's not here anymore. It's in the cloud. Now, I'm not against the cloud. I mean, I'm telling people to use Chromebooks, right? That's how a Chromebook works. Everything's in Google Drive. But I think it should be explicit. You should understand that that's what they're doing. It shouldn't just be done. And, of course, that's when you start getting the pop-up. Oh, you're running out of room. You better pay some more money. Now Apple gets a nice monthly annuity from you. 100 megabytes, 99 cents a month. I do 100 gigabytes. I do 200 gigabytes. That's, what, $1.99 a month. They make it low enough so as you don't feel a lot of pain. The threshold's fairly low, but it adds up. That's $24 a year. Apple's getting out of me that they wouldn't have gotten before. You multiply that by tens of millions in users, and you see how they get to $24 billion in revenue last quarter. Emmerich's saying that the iCloud Drive storage is opt-in, and that may be the case. I don't remember saying okay to it. I don't know how they couch it, and obviously, neither did Duck, because he's saying, what happened? What's that? Why is it was in the air? It's up in the air now. 8888 ask Leo. That's the phone number. I don't want to be a cynic, and I guess it's not really even cynical to say these are for-profit companies and they're trying to make sure their business is thriving and doing well. But I just wish, and I've said this before, that they would consider happy customers part of being a good business. You know, isn't it in the long run? Isn't our happiness important? I hope so. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Out.
Yeah, I guess this is a Sierra feature. So this is iCloud Drive. You know, I probably did turn on iCloud Drive, not understanding that that wasn't merely a backup, but actually moved your desktop and documents folder to the cloud. I'm sure that, you know, that makes sense. I'm sure I turned that on. But see, now this documents folder is no longer on your hard drive. It's in the cloud. It's on the iCloud Drive. Turn off iCloud Drive, I guess, huh? It's different because if you buy a cloud book, then you aren't surprised. If you have a Macintosh computer that you've had since 1984 that always stored your document folder on the hard drive, you don't expect Apple to just take it off your hard drive and move it to the cloud and just store it there. And say, a switch that says turn on iCloud Drive should explain a little bit more what that means. Yeah, we're going to delete your documents folder and put it in the cloud. That's different. If you have a cloud book, a device designed for cloud usage, like a Chromebook, but I don't do the same things I do with my Chromebook that I do with my desktop computer. So that's why, Google's never made any bones about a Chromebook being about the cloud. That's what it is. Macintosh, you know, was a little bit older and didn't do that. Yeah, I understood that. If I'm using Pages and I save a file, it says save it on the cloud. And it's even very clear when you're saving it locally versus saving it on the cloud. That I understood. I didn't understand that checking that box as use iCloud Drive would then move everything to the cloud. And the reason it became an issue is because I wanted to have all my computers have a documents folder that is duplicated on my Synology NAS at home. So they have a shared documents folder across all my computers. And that's how I want it. I don't want it on iCloud. I want it on my NAS. And then they charge you money for the extra storage, right? It's even confusing. I don't even think the way they describe it is very clear. So. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888-ASK-LEO. Back to the phones we go, and Dave is on the line from Seattle. Hello, Dave. Did I push the button? Hello, Dave.
Hey, Leo. How you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. That's my fault. I left my phone on mute for a second.
No, that's good.
Hold for a little bit.
That's no fine. Worries. Yeah, we keep you on hold a long time, so I understand. Believe me.
No problem.
Thank you.
Quick question for you on a TiVo. I know you're a fan of the TiVo.
Big fan.
I am, too. My one gripe, I guess, if you will, perfect, I guess, second world problem. This is what I'm getting there.
Not first world, second world. Okay.
First world. Sorry. Misspoke as I'm multitasking here. When I go to my shows, it shows a list of all my shows, and then there's a sidebar, like a left column.
Yeah.
And that column can be turned off, and you hit the
right.
I think it's the option button.
Yep.
And you could hide that left column.
Right.
My problem is, it comes back every couple of days. It's driving me nuts. And I can't permanently make it go away.
Yeah, it's funny. I guess I must have done the same thing because it's on mine. I can see it. It's handy because it says, you know, shows we're about to delete. If you use TiVo suggestions, it shows you shows it's about to delete. It shows you, you know, movies, TV shows. It gives you some, it's like little search fields kind of.
Sure, I can see how it would be helpful.
Yeah, and you know, you don't want to waste the space. You'd like to have the whole screen devoted to your shows. Golly, I don't know why it turns that back on. I'm thinking it probably did the same to me because I do remember turning it off, but I also remember that it's still there.
Okay.
so that would be a bug, I guess.
Yeah, I called TiVo to ask them, and they had no idea.
Oh, that's sad. But you mean they had no idea what, why it happens, or that you could do it?
They had no idea what to do about it. They're aware that it happens.
Oh, okay.
They're aware that some people don't prefer it, and they're like, yeah, sorry.
Yeah, it's called bad software. They need to fix it. I'm sure they will at some point. Mike B., who is our TiVo fanatic in the chat room, says, yeah, it's a known issue. Lots of people complain about it.
Okay, well, if it's a known issue, maybe they'll someday fix it, but who knows?
Software is hard. Software is hard. And I worry about TiVo because
if I could write my own DVR software,
I would do it.
In my dream world,
yeah.
I wish there was a way to, like, my daughter and my wife and I, we have certain shows that we all watch, and we have certain shows that just that one person watches. Well, if I could choose a profile, kind of like on Netflix, a profile of which user is watching it.
Oh.
If I delete a show, it would still remain in my wife's queue or my daughter's queue with a show that they all like.
There's a good idea.
Yeah, but I don't know how to execute it.
Yeah. You know, I've known, you know, heavyweights in the computer industry. There was a guy named George Morrow who had a very famous computer system called the Morrow computer. It was a portable, kind of like the Osborne. I loved the Morrows. George's philosophy was he only used software he wrote himself.
Oh, I see.
Most of us don't have that, either the skill or the time or the luxury to do that.
Right.
And so as a result, we're at the mercy of, you know, whoever wrote the software. And if you've ever, have you ever done any coding? Because it's hard.
I haven't.
Yeah. If you get some sympathy for the coder, it's easy to miss a thing or make a change somewhere. Partly that's the tools. And I have to say, there's a movement afoot to kind of give programmers tools that are less likely to have these kinds of weird side effects. Partly it's because programming, the way computer programming evolved, we have very powerful languages that let programmers make mistakes, essentially. And programmers like the power. Unfortunately, with great power comes great responsibility, and they haven't really embraced the responsibility. It's hard to make bug-free software with the tools that exist.
Yeah. Well, I think otherwise, I think that TiVo is pretty rock solid. I love
it. It is. It is.
I've got three minis and the one Romeo in the main room. And
yeah.
The fact that you can download shows and watch offline, it's so awesome.
So you're not rebooting the TiVo or anything like that. I mean,
my hunch is it's happening whenever it either does a software update or whenever it does connects to the service daily or every couple days.
That makes sense. Yeah, one of the things TiVos do is they do connect every day or so to get the program guide. And it sounds like that's when it's turning it back on. Certainly, it would make sense if you rebooted it or you downloaded new software, you know, an update. And I don't think it does that very often. That would make sense. It turns that option off. But it shouldn't turn that option off every time it goes out and gets a program guide. That's not good.
You're right. I think it happens more like every 3 to 4 days, not every day.
Okay. Well, you know, I'm going to try it at home and see if I can figure out any rhyme or reason. Unfortunately, TiVo, as you know, was sold to a company called Rovi. And Rovi's already in.
His fear is they're gonna squash us that have the lifetime membership, which I have.
Yeah, I have three. I don't know why, but I have three lifetime memberships. And that was a lot of money. And every time I mentioned that, people said, you know, you didn't have to do that. You could do a Romeo, and you could have it. We want three separate. I have the new Bolt 3.
So you have separate DVRs.
Three separate DVRs in the house. And the newest one is the 4K Bolt. Bolt Plus.
My next purchase, actually.
Very nice. And it's small. They've really done a nice job. But it's the same software in all of them. And obviously, they don't have.
Well, they have two or three different models of the Bolt, too, right? Is it just hard drive size? Is it the only difference?
No. One of the Bolts is 4K. One is not. So if you have a 4K TV or think you'll be getting a 4K TV, you want the Plus.
I have a couple of them, actually.
Yeah. That's, in fact, why I bought a Bolt, because I had the old Romeo Pro, but it wasn't. It was HD, not 4K UHD. So
let me ask you: since you bought the Bolt, if you are watching 4K content, you're talking about like from Netflix or from Amazon or something, right? On the TiVo, not the over the air.
No, there's no over the air 4K, and I wonder how long it's going to be before there is. I doubt there will be. But
got the Roku, the Premier Roku, and
Well, so when I got a 4K TV, being a completist, I just bought all 4K input devices, right? Okay. Because I have a 4K TV, so I don't want the program guide in 1080p. I want to see it in all its glory.
Sure,
right?
You can go as far as like you know when you select the input. Like I'll stream a show from Netflix, and I'll select that input again. To see that it's actually in 4K.
Yeah, because it pops up on the TV.
I can watch the show.
Yeah. I don't care about the show. I just want to see that UHD designation. Yeah.
Yeah, as long as I know it's in 4K, then I can relax and my wife can know.
I've watched some of the worst shows I would never watch just because they were in UHD.
Oh, yeah, me too. I'm from work and she'll be streaming a show from Showtime, and we have it in high def, and she's watching it in standard.
My wife does that too. I can't believe it. I'll go in the gym. She's watching TV. She's watching standard definition, and I'm, honey, we have HD, you know. She's, that's fine. It looks fine. I don't see the difference.
That's what I hate when I travel, and if I sit in the hotel room because I don't sleep very much, I'll sit in the hotel room to watch TV, and it's a high def TV, but it's standard.
Oh, it's the worst. The things are stretched. It's the worst.
Yeah, and that's why I love my Slingbox and my TiVo, because then I could still stream.
That's why God gave us man caves, my friend.
Exactly.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More calls right after this. Take care.
You're out.
Honey, why are you watching the Today Show in SD? Well, it looks fine. It does look fine. At the distance she's at, it's exactly the same, probably. Same reason I didn't really need to buy the Bolt Plus. So God created the man cave so we'd have a hole to hide in where we could live with our predispositions. Yeah, that's right, Dr. Mom. Dr. Mom says God created the man cave so that husbands would get out from underfoot when wives need to get something done. Honey, go in your man cave. Do not emerge until later. I'm Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Last half hour of the show today. Let's see if we get some more calls in here, starting with Kathleen in San Diego. Hi, Kathleen.
Hi, how are you?
I'm great. Thanks for your patience.
Okay, My issue is this. I live in San Diego, as you just said, and I have an aunt, an elderly aunt that lives in Laguna Woods, and she's got a, her issue, she's got a Windows computer, and she's on Facebook a lot because that's how she keeps in touch with her family and friends and everything.
She's not alone. 1.8 billion people are on Facebook every day.
Yeah.
1.8 billion. They just announced that. Wow.
And I've been listening to you talk about Chromebooks, but I don't know if that would work well for her because she is really, she's 87. It's hard for her to learn anything new. And when it comes to email, she was on Outlook Express until we got her Windows 8. And she has managed to, the only email program that has worked for her is Outlook.
Yeah.
So,
Yeah, because she learned it. And at 87, you don't want to have to learn a whole new email program. I don't blame her.
Windows XP to Windows 8.
Yeah.
So, I thought that was good. So, but her problem is that she has had, in the last year, probably 10 times, she's gotten these pop-ups, those tech support pop-ups that take over the screen, and she calls the number, and she ponies up the money. And
she's just pray for them. And it's so sad that con artists prey on our seniors. And the problem is they're trusting, and they don't really know, if it's real, and they go out, and I feel so bad for her. And yeah, that would not happen on a Chromebook.
And I just can't impress on her that, that it's not real. And so the most recent one happened like 2 days ago, and she tried to call me first, which is really good, but I didn't pick up the phone right away.
Yeah.
She left me an answering machine message.
Well, honey, he said the computer was all messed up and he showed me the virus, so I gave him $300.
She said it was Microsoft.
Yeah, Microsoft called. Yeah.
And she called me and left an answering machine message, and I could hear the pop up thing going on in the background, and it was saying, if you don't call within 5 minutes,
It was an emergency. They said there was a virus, and it would have been terrible.
That
breaks my heart. When these guys, they call me too. By the way, a Chromebook isn't going to save her in that regard. They're going to call her. We get calls too. And every time they call me, I actually say, "Don't you feel terrible scamming people? What would your mother say?" And then they hang up on me. I don't think it's had any impact, but it's so wrong. And they're taking advantage of people, and it's just terrible. So a Chromebook wouldn't help that, only because she still could be called. She wouldn't see the pop-ups anymore, but she still could be.
Last year, these have all been ones where she has called.
They pop up on the screen. Yeah. So just tell her and she doesn't get it when you say, Andy, this is a lie. These people aren't, this is just, she doesn't get it.
She just doesn't.
What about, here's a crazy thought, but what about an iPad?
Well, same thing. I let her try my iPad for a while, and I don't think
she's set in her ways.
And everything, I think it would drive her crazy. I mean, she thought she wanted one for a while, but the reality is anything new like that, she can use Windows. One of the things I was wondering is there any way, I know how to turn off remote access servers. Okay, I took away her, I established myself as an administrator on that machine.
There you go.
She has a user account, so I don't think they're installing any
software. No, they're just taking her money. Yeah.
But they connect remotely.
Yeah, but they can't do anything because she doesn't have administrator access. So,
but how can I prevent them from connecting remotely? That's what I'd really like to be able to do.
Well,
it drives me crazy.
They're going to get, whether they connect remotely or not, they're still going to get her money and her credit card number. They're not able to put anything on her system if she doesn't have administrator access. So their connecting remotely doesn't really do anything too bad. Let me think how you could stop that. I mean, what you'd have to do is get more serious about this and really lock the system down. It's possible using tools Microsoft offers IT professionals, things like Group Policy Edit, to prevent remote access on the machine. But I don't, you know, that's, it's still, she's still going to get, I'm sorry to say, you know, if you surf the web, you're going to get these pop-ups. And if she's still going to call the number and give them the money, it doesn't, the remote access isn't really going to change anything.
I didn't go through her browser history on every one of these. I think they came from Facebook. So one of the things I did is I went on, she has Adblock, and I know none of these are like a sure thing, but I.
So even with Adblock, she's still getting this.
Well, it didn't have the setting put on. I didn't even realize she had it until I was on her computer yesterday.
So there's two different ad blocks. My recommendation is actually something called uBlock Origin.
uBlock Origin.
Yeah, it's an extension she could put on her. You can put on her browser. She can't because she's not an administrator. And uBlock Origin will block all of these pop-ups and most of these scams.
Okay.
Yep.
Because then the other thing
it's
is,
free, by the way, and of all the ad blockers, it's my favorite. uBlock, okay, and you know, unfortunately, all of these, it's confusing because there's AdBlock and AdBlock Plus. There's uBlock Origin. Yeah, there's uBlock Origin and there's uBlock. My preferred, strongly preferred choice is uBlock Origin.
Okay, I'll definitely check.
And then the default settings are probably sufficient, but if you wish, you can go into the advanced settings and even turn up the security.
Yeah, that's what I did with that. I tried to make it so that, you know, so that there were no ads. I usually don't.
The problem with AdBlock and AdBlock Plus is they allow ads through if you pay them. So.
Well, I think isn't AdBlock Plus paid or not?
It might be. I don't think so. I think it's free. But the way AdBlock Plus, they have this so-called acceptable ads policy, and companies can pay them to be whitelisted through the ad blocker. uBlock Origin doesn't do that. uBlock Origin's really good. You could. The problem is it's going to really limit her capability. You could get even more draconian with things like NoScript, which turns off JavaScript in her browser, and just enable it for a few sites like Facebook. I don't think it's coming from Facebook. Well, it could be. I've never seen that on Facebook.
I'm looking at her history because I saw she was viewing a friend's page, and then she clicked on something, and she got the leaving Facebook, you know, URL with the URL of the ad.
Huh.
And then she got the malicious ad. But it was weird because I went through that ad, and I was going to file a report with Facebook about it, and they wanted a screenshot because I had seen it earlier. The people who had that site changed.
Yeah, of course.
Page.
So what they do is they buy an ad because it's an automatic ad system on Facebook, and they change it almost immediately. As soon as they get a few bites, then they go with something else. Because Facebook's aggressive about getting
away,
you can't report it.
Of it.
Yeah, they're aggressive about keeping it clean. It should be clean on Facebook because they know everything. They control it all. But there's still a few loopholes. Man, I just feel for you. I'll tell you what. She's really lucky to have you because you are smart and you're doing the best you can. Put uBlock Origin on there. I think that'll help a lot. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Problem is, you know, if Aunt Sally is just going to say, she's just too trusting. She's just going to say yes, right?
It'll just take her again.
Yeah, and that's the problem is it's very difficult to, you know, to lock the computer down in such a way that she doesn't get. I mean, literally, people will call her house too. I'm surprised she hasn't been getting calls.
Well, I put like Nomo Robo on there.
Oh, good.
She has Vonage and.
Oh, good. They may not have her number. Yeah. You're a good niece. She's very lucky to have you.
No, I'm trying to do everything I can to prevent these things from coming through. Because,
she falls for every one of them.
Oh,
you know, I worry about my mom. My mom's 84, and I worry about her all the time, too. But she's savvy, but I still worry, you know. And, golly, I don't know.
I was wondering, though, like, I connect with LogMeIn. There's no way, I mean, why can't I restrict logins remote logins to just me.
Let me ask the chat room this issue. Is there a setting that she can turn off all remote access logins? I mean, there's going to be ways around it. These guys will say, okay, we'll go to this web page and download this tool, and then we can see your system.
But she can't install it. She can't.
Right. That's true. That's a good point.
But they're still getting remote access.
So apparently in the settings, CJ's saying in the settings there's remote disable access control.
Right, but then I won't be able to connect.
Right, and that's how you're serving her.
Yes.
Yeah.
When I connected the other day, it was hilarious. When I got on there, there was a window open with her credit card information, and they were trying to submit it. I got it just in time.
Wow.
I'm fighting for the mouse with
this
guy.
Oh, my golly.
And I managed to close it, and I shut the
just disconnect it
down
from the internet.
But
just.
But I can't call her because she's on the phone with him.
Oh.
So
I see. You're doing this remotely. Wow.
Yes. And so it went on for an hour. The computer kept getting restarted. He'd bring it up. I would shut the computer down again. And I still can't call her. It was over an hour before he finally stopped doing it.
Oh, my God. How frustrating, Kathleen.
I did stop him from charging the car.
Oh, my golly. And she just doesn't get it? She just doesn't understand?
She doesn't remember, and plus I think part of it is I think it's almost she's somewhat forgetful, not as much as this would indicate. I think she blacks it out because she is so embarrassed.
Yeah, of course she is. And you know what? It's nice for her to have somebody to talk to. They're nice, these nice Indian men.
Right, and then she says, you know, it was Microsoft. What am I supposed to do? And this computer, I can hear this thing beeping and telling her, you know, you've got to call now.
Oh, that's so horrible. Gosh, it's so. Dr. Mom is saying that AARP has an Elder Watch page that has suggestions. I don't know how sophisticated it will be, but
they're probably not very sophisticated.
I would Google. Well, there might be. You know, this is not an unusual problem. So Google Elder Watch AARP.
Okay. I'll try that.
Wow.
I just don't. It seems like a huge oversight that there's no way that I can't restrict logins to just one person.
Well, and this is what's wrong with a general-purpose computer is it presumes, you know, that the user wants control. And Microsoft wouldn't be able to sell many copies of Windows if it didn't let you do anything. They just assume you know what you're doing.
Well, yeah, but then anybody in the world, if you turn on remote access, can gain access?
Yeah, they assume that the owner of the computer should. I'm sorry, Kathleen. I got to run, but thank you for your call. Right. I think you've helped some people. All right.
Okay, great.
Take care.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888, Ask Leo. Back to the phones. And Adam, also in San Diego. Hi, Adam.
Yay.
Hey.
Hear me?
I hear you great.
Give me 1 second.
Yeah. Give your dad a second. He's talking on the radio. What can I do for you?
Okay. Hi. I wanted to ask you in regards to photo recovery. Me and my girlfriend, we have two beautiful children, and our firstborn, we had all his photos and videos on her MacBook, and the day that we were separating everything, you can see where this is going.
Oh, no.
The problem is that the battery was semi, kind of like bursting, and I don't know what happened, but the hard drive, I don't know if they call it the same for Mac, I'm not too familiar with the Macs, but it got damaged.
Yeah.
And the part where it got damaged was the part that obviously all the photos and starting it up.
Oh, no. So, and yeah, that's physical damage, which is very difficult to recover from.
So we, you know, knowing I, you know, tried a long time ago, I tried using this recovery thing to recover some of my old pictures from when I was a child.
Can you start the drive up? I mean, can you actually access it?
Yes, actually, my brother's a bit of a computer tech, so he managed to, you know, fix the OS. It works fine and everything, but the pictures and everything is not there.
Yeah.
And so he tried.
Okay, so the drive wasn't physically damaged, but the data was wiped.
Yes, and yeah. He tried using this GoPro recovery thing, and unfortunately, you know, I recovered some pictures, but you know, the most important ones weren't there. And I kind of want to know why. How does that work? What determines?
Well, it depends. What know. I'm not sure exactly how this got damaged. So yeah, hard drives are very vulnerable. They're spinning pieces of metal and,
yeah.
You know, and, you know, maybe the battery, it sounds like it didn't actually physically damage the hard drive, but it may be that the operating system spewed ones and zeros all over it. Sometimes you can get that back. I wouldn't necessarily give up on it. Generally, the data doesn't get wiped out, just the directory, the card catalog that lets you access the data gets damaged. Much of the data may still be there.
Okay.
That's why those recovery tools work.
Which recovery tool will be?
Well, I generally recommend a free one. I'm not crazy about it. There's companies out there who say, well, free recovery, run this in there and say, oh, I can get 1,000 drives back. That'll be $58.73. And I just bothers me because that's not – so there's free stuff out there. First of all, the basic form of recovery is very easy to do. If you erase a drive, you actually don't erase any data. You just mark all the files on the drive reusable, all those spaces reusable, but the data is still there. So it's a simple thing for a program to go through it, find all the files one by one, change the name of the file, that's all that's been changed, and recover it. So that's probably the stuff you were able to recover, that's probably what happened. The program I recommend is from a company called Piriform, Piriform, and it's called Recova. It's like recover, but with an A at the end instead of an ER.
Recova.
And that's free.
And then I have another question. Because I know someone, I saw someone, you know, when my brother did try, or, you know, a while back, some of the pictures that we ended up getting back, for some reason, the quality of the picture was completely reduced. You know, it was like a
small, okay,
little picture.
So you didn't actually get the original files back. You got the thumbnails of the files that were stored by another program. Maybe you used Picasa or some other photo editing program.
She used iPhoto. So how iPhoto. Would I go about recovering that?
Well, so iPhoto stores in its index. So that's one separate file from the photos. It stores thumbnails. The originals are stored in the iPhoto folder, iPhoto file. The photos photo file is actually a folder. Inside it, there's another folder called original photos. That's where the originals are stored. But he didn't get those. He got the thumbnails. That's why they look like they're low quality. So the best way to do this is to take that drive out of the Mac. Put it on a PC, and maybe your brother can do this because he's a tech. She should have the tools to do this. Put it on a PC. Do not write to that drive ever again. You know, that's your only chance of getting anything back. As soon as you write to that drive, you're overwriting data.
Correct.
So don't touch that drive. Don't install anything on it or anything. Take it out. Put it in a PC. Put Recova. Run Recova on it. There is a – it depends what's wrong with it. Recova recovers erased files, deleted files, that kind of thing, or a bad disk catalog, that kind of thing. If there's other kinds of damage, then other tools might be more useful. There's a program my friend Steve Gibson wrote called SpinWrite. It's not cheap. It's $80. What SpinWrite does is it doesn't know about files. It doesn't know about folders. It doesn't know about directories. It just knows about disk sectors. Sometimes parts of the disk become hard to read. The operating system gives up prematurely on those and says, I can't read it, and never shows anything there. But the data is still there. What SpinWrite does is it tries harder. It tries to read. It tries really hard. It never gives up. And if it can read it even once, it'll then relocate it to a known good sector, and your data will be back. So SpinWrite is another great tool. That's from grc.com. But it's great only in certain circumstances. If you have sectors that have become difficult to read, that's where it's useful. Recover's useful at a higher level when the file system has been damaged or files have been erased. Then there's the lowest level is the hardware level. That's thousands of dollars because somebody has to take it apart, put in new parts. It's very expensive. I don't think that's what happened, though, if you can see anything. Whatever you do, don't write to the drive again. Get it out and put it in a PC, and there are a variety of file recovery tools that you can use on that. Okay.
So we started at one process and we got some pictures back, but like you said, we got the thumbnails.
Those are the thumbnails. That means that the iPhoto library was intact, but the photos in it weren't.
Okay.
Doesn't mean they're gone. Doesn't mean they're gone, but you need to get the drive out of that computer and somewhere where it won't be written to. Okay.
Oh no! Yeah, definitely. We took it out, and so
good.
We started the process of.
Actually, yeah, your brother knew what he was doing.
The computer.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, but he was kind of clueless. Not clueless, but wasn't too sure which recovery program to use.
So Recova is free. SpinRite is not, but it's worth it if Recova doesn't do it all.
Perfect, Leo. I love listening to your show, and thank you so much.
I hope you get him back. I know those photos are precious.
I know.
I know. And by the way, once you get him back, can you do me a favor? Make sure you back him up regularly.
I will. We backed up our daughter, and it was just because I don't believe in Mac. I'm a laptop and desktop guy, and so I have a 4 terabyte, and I saved everything.
Oh, good. So you saved the daughter's pictures, and your son's going to hate you forever because when he's 40 years old, he's like, where are my baby pictures? Where are my baby? Oh, son, it's a long story.
Very long story. Your mother, you see,
used this thing called a Macintosh. They don't exist anymore. And for good reason. Hey, good luck.
Thanks, Adam. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Cue the Carbonite commercial, right? This is. Hey, we're out of time. It's been fun. I'm so glad we could talk to this week, and I hope we'll do it again next week, okay? Same time, same station. Don't forget the website, techguylabs.com. I put links to everything there. Thanks to Kim Schaffer, doing the phones. Great job. Thanks to Michael Causio. He's our musical director. Great job. Thanks to all of you for being here. We'll see you next week. Have a great Geek Week. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. Thank you so much for being here. And don't forget, it's just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows on the Netcast Network. It's called TWIT, T-W-I-T. It stands for This Week in Tech, and you'll find it at twit.tv, including the podcasts for this show. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPads, iPhones, Apple Watches on iOS Today, security on Security Now. I mean, I can go on and on and on. You even get your daily dose of tech news with Tech News Today. And, of course, the big show every Sunday afternoon, This Week in Tech. You'll find it all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next week with another great Tech Guy show. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you next time.